We got a lot of fans helping us out.
Adam Curry, John C. Dvorak.
Thursday, November 2nd, 2023. This is your award-winning Give On Nation Media Assassination, episode 1604.
This is No Agenda.
Your personal large language model is broadcasting live from the heart of the Texas Hill Country here in FEMA Region number 6. In the morning, everybody, I'm Adam Curry.
And from northern Silicon Valley, where we say well wishes to Bruce Bochy and the Texas Rangers, I'm John C. Dvorak.
It's Craig Vaughn and Buzzkill in the morning.
Yeah, Texas did something.
What'd they do?
We did good at sports ball.
The other ones.
Yay, yes,
exactly.
Sports ball. We rule with sports ball. Now, I was for the Astros, of course, was supposed to be for the Astros here. And then they got kicked out by the Rangers. Now the Rangers are they won the World Series. Who else from the world is in the World Series?
Well, the players are international.
Oh, okay. Were there any Japanese players?
There's not on the Rangers that I know of, but there's plenty of Japanese players. In fact, the best player, not to belabor this
no, conversation, at all, but
the best
go.
Player in the major leagues is actually a Japanese dude who both pitches and he's a big home run slugger.
Didn't a Japanese team win one year? Somehow I remember this. Yeah,
they did. The Japanese came over and they won.
Yeah, didn't they win the World Series at some point?
Yeah, the Tokyo Giants, I think.
Oh, yeah, there's a contradiction. The Tokyo Giants. Uh-huh.
Yeah, that is the name of an actual team.
No, I'm sure it is.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I believe you. When it comes to sports, you are the authority on the No Agenda show. I just add color. Which I think I do well.
Of course, they could. They're the Giants, but I think they're from Tokyo. Now I'm thinking, second guessing myself.
But has an American ever won the sumo championships? Is the question.
Well, there's been some Americans, Samoans, or were kind of American. I think there was a Samoan.
kind of American. Pre Americans. They were kind of here. Yeah.
It's mostly Manchurians right now that are winning the sumos. Mm-hmm.
Well, all that aside, I know you have a couple of clips, so we might as well just get into it because we have to dive in deep because no one in media, and I mean absolutely no one, has done a good job at this.
New presidential order on artificial intelligence, setting national rules on the rapidly growing technology that has big potential, but also comes with risk. Our senior White House correspondent, Selena Wang, has those details for us.
Selena. Good morning,
Selena.
Good morning, Robin. The White House is calling this the strongest action that any government has taken on artificial intelligence safety and security. Today, the president signing an executive order that would require developers working on the most powerful AI models to share their safety test results with the government before releasing their products to the public. It also includes developing standards for ethically using AI and for detecting AI-generated content and labeling it as such. But this is just the start to tackling the many dangers of AI as it rapidly advances. The technology threatens jobs by replacing human tasks and makes it far easier to spread misinformation and to steal people's data. The White House is also urging Congress to do more, to pass bipartisan privacy legislation, and the White House making clear that this isn't just America's problem, but that the U.S. needs to work with the world to set standards here.
Lindsay. Yes, yes. We're so good at working with the world. We need to work with
the
world.
That was the worst report I've heard so far.
Well,
who is this woman?
She's some woman for Good Morning America. The best report, who really was Deutsche Welle, you know, because it's not just the executive order. It comes just a few days before the big summit in the United Kingdom at the home of the code breakers.
Yeah, that's where I get my clips from.
This one from Deutsche Welle, it really killed me.
So one of the godfathers of AI, Joshua Bengio, is here. And he's at...
Josiah Bengio, one of the godfathers.
He's a godfather?
A godfather.
So one of the godfathers of AI, Joshua Bengio, is here. And
Bengio!
This lady, by the way, I don't know what kind of assignment she got, but she, you know, her hair is just is it blonde lady? It's like she didn't do her hair this morning. It's just not a good look standing out front of that English countryside home of the code breakers.
He said that in the future, artificial intelligence could help spread misinformation quickly, destabilize democracy. Bioweapons can basically be built by people at home. So that
bioweapons, AI will help people build bioweapons at home in your kitchen sink.
A really massive risk involved, and Rishi Sunak has assembled these tech
brains
really from across the world. Delegation from China, we're hearing, is here, and all the major Western democracies and tech entrepreneurs to actually come to a baseline, a guardrail really,
to
see where are the most extreme risks from artificial intelligence and where should governments what can governments do about it? What can international bodies do about it?
So before we get to your clips in from the UK, President Biden did this big ceremony, a very long speech about all kinds of other things before he got to the AI executive order. And Kara Swisher, Scott G were there because, you know, they're AI influencers. It's very important that they get invited. How can we never get invited to the White House? We're influencers.
You should have been invited by Trump.
Yeah, fat chance. So this is really what it comes down to for the president, whoever is in charge of him. It's all about the elections and deep fakes. And he, in this 26-second stand-up, he kind of said it all.
It's already happening. AI devices are being used to deceive people. Deep fakes. Use AI-generated audio and video to smear reputations, spread fake news, and commit fraud. With AI, fraudsters can take 3-second, and you all know this, 3-second recording of your voice. I've watched one of me on a couple of times. I said, when the hell did I say that?
How would he know?
Exactly. We laugh about the stuff that is real. In fact, someone sent me that clip and said, here's an obvious deep fake of Biden talking about deep fakes. I'm like, no, he actually said that. But the, and just before we get into it, I think it's actually, now that they have, you know, because I read this whole executive order, and I have some things to say about it later. It's actually a great way to, if you have control of it, it's a great way to use AI's misinformation to cover up actual facts. I will give you an example, because this is something that came across from, I think, France 24. Now, you are, I would say, between the two of us, certainly, but you're quite skilled at being able to tell if someone is using cocaine on a regular basis. Am I right? I mean, that's...
Zelensky.
Yes, it has been your assertion from many videos that President Zelensky is probably a cokehead, correct?
And if you talk to Ukrainians, they all think he is too.
So
I'm not alone in this.
So if you want to debunk it, all you have to do is say, oh, that's a deep fake AI.
Sienna Lee reporting for us there. Well, it's time now for our daily fact-checking segment on the program.
Daily fact-checking!
Truth or fake? And for that, I'm joined here in the studio.
Wow, what an imaginative title. Truth or fake?
Well, we've been playing truth or fake for about 5 years.
No, we haven't.
Don't mug the title when we've been on this for a while.
We don't actually call it truth or fake.
No, that's what France 24 has it. That's what they call it. I have no idea why they call it. That is dumb.
Or fake. And for that, I'm joined here in the studio by Catalana Marchand d'Abreu. Thanks for joining us on the program. Today, we're talking about Ukraine, as I know you often do, Catalina. And President Zelensky, he's been accused of a drug addiction problem. So true or fake?
True or fake?
Talking Ukrainians, we're going to address certain rumors on social media claiming that President Zelensky is addicted to cocaine. We will disprove these claims.
Cocaine.
Well, you'll notice she switches back and forth between cocaine and then she's just like, coke.
By pro-Russian accounts.
It's pro-Russian accounts, this deep fake. So this is how you do it. You get your actual deep fake ready. You put that out there because, man, dude, Volodymyr, man, stop tooting so much. Now we got to go. We got to go debunk that. Boys, let's get a deep fake out there. Okay. Let's just say, let's put it on some Russian accounts.
To cocaine. We will disprove these claims made by pro-Russian accounts, starting with this.
Not even pro-Russian accounts.
Video from April 23rd, where we can see an alleged pile of coke and a credit card on a.
Yeah, also just alleged pile of coke. She forgot to say cocaine.
Third, where we can see an alleged pile of coke and a credit card on a President Zelensky's desk during a video call with the man of the hour, Elon Musk. This phone call took place on March 6th, and this user claims that the cameraman accidentally filmed the pile of coke on his desk. Coke. So more skeptical users on social media noticed that the credit card had a strange halo to it, and hence claimed that it was digitally altered, and we can confirm indeed that this video was digitally altered indeed. Here we have Elliot Higgins, who made a split screen video version of the altered video and the digitally altered one. So
they didn't even do this work. They're just grabbing someone else's, you know.
I'm liking this thesis of yours because it's given me all kinds of ideas.
Yes.
Because what they're doing, this is very interesting dimensionally when it comes to deconstructing something. They're taking stuff that's obviously done as a joke, and that particular video was a joke because everyone knows he's a cokehead. Yes, so some joker put this on there, and they're using that to debunk the fact that he's a cokehead. Not that that video is a fake.
Exactly.
But the whole thesis that he's a cokehead is bull crap, when in fact that's not.
Yeah.
So this is very, very interesting.
Yes.
The fact that you, and this is exactly where this is going to go, what you just said, which is that they're going to use, you know, joke stuff. And that's not even a deep fake. It's just somebody doing some video at, you know, tomfoolery.
Yes. Yes.
Which is what the most you could call it, putting the pile of coke on his desk.
And by the way, the pile of coke was huge.
Yeah, of course. So, you know, it was done as a gag, but it wasn't done as a gag, you know, out of the blue because somebody thought it was funny. Just because he's a cokehead and they thought it would be funny to point it out.
Exactly. Exactly. Now, I have one more, and then I want you to play your clips, because I'm going to set it up. Because if we have this, we just heard the smartest minds in tech, the brilliantest people. And this is the house where the code breakers were. Alan Turing was here. This is the place. This is the Mecca, the origins of AI. And who do you send? Kamala Harris.
The U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris has challenged governments around the world to come up with a common set of understandings on artificial intelligence. In a speech at a global gathering on the issue in England.
I know, you send her, well, everyone knows.
But yeah, but what is it for, a common what of understanding? A common what?
Let's listen again.
Artificial intelligence.
Let's hear it again.
Around the world to come up with a common set of understandings on artificial intelligence.
A common set of understanding. What does that even mean?
I think it means definitions, and I'll get into that after your clips.
In a speech at a global gathering on the issue in England, Harris said countries needed to address the full spectrum of the risks posed by the new technology.
Woo!
She said a new US institution could act as a model for others to test the safety of AI, and she added that now is the time to take action and ensure that artificial intelligence is safe for the future.
Just as AI has the potential to do profound good.
Like what?
It also has the potential to cause profound harm.
Notice how they rarely say what the good things are. It's only, ooh, scary.
From AI-enabled cyber attacks at a scale beyond anything we've seen before.
Cyber attacks at a scale beyond anything we've seen before. Like denial of service.
What's the mechanism for AI creating the biggest cyber attack that we've ever seen? When we've seen some whoppers.
Yeah, we've seen some really good ones. Yeah. And by the way, most hacks are human hacks, psychology hacks, not cyber. All right, let's go.
To AI formulated bioweapons.
Woo! AI is going to put a bioweapon together.
Even been one?
No.
That could endanger the lives of millions of people.
Like
you
COVID.
Mean like COVID-19 that our own government developed?
Like COVID.
Is it going to be that bad or worse?
I think so.
Threats are often referred to as the existential threats of AI.
Well, often referred to, John, we got to get on board with this. We have to get on board with the often referred to existential threats from AI. That means we're going to die from AI.
Because, of course, they could endanger the very existence of humanity.
Oh, of course. Of course. He just says it so cavalierly. Of course.
These threats, without question, are
without
profound.
Question.
And they demand global action.
Without question. Stop questioning me.
Well, as the U.S. vice president called for urgent action from threat from AI, Britain published what it says is a landmark declaration aimed at boosting global cooperation to ensure the safety of artificial intelligence. The declaration, agreed by 28 countries, including the U.S. and China, was presented on the opening day of the first ever global AI safety summit, which takes place in the U.K. The British government says the Bletchley Declaration will act as a starting point for a global conversation on the issue. Speaking to the BBC, Prime Minister Rishi Sunak said monitoring the risks posed by artificial intelligence was too important to be left to big tech firms alone.
You know, I'm sick of these declarations. So now they have the Bletchley Declaration. We need a declaration. We need our own declaration. We call it the Podunk Declaration or whatever.
No, we have to give it something, a cool name, not Podunk.
Well, okay, now it's the Bletchley Declaration.
We'll come up with something.
And they affirm that whilst...
You have to affirm. Everyone has to affirm. We have to come up with a declaration, and we have to affirm. And it has to begin with, we affirm
whilst, you got to put whilst in there. These are good terms. Whilst safety must be considered across the...
I think Fredericksburg is a good name for a declaration.
Fredericksburg Declaration, yes.
Berkeley's also not bad.
No.
The Berkeley Declaration.
No.
Yeah, it sounds too late. You're right. It immediately sounds like some sort of communist.
Fredericksburg
thing.
Sounds kind of Nazi. You know, it's kind of Fredericksburg Declaration. Yes, okay.
Fredericksburg.
So, whilst safety must be considered across the AI lifecycle, actors are in this. What are actors doing?
I thought they were on strike.
This shouldn't be working. Actors developing frontier AI capabilities. In particular, those AI systems which are unusually powerful and potentially harmful, they make it sound like terrorists are using this stuff. Have a particularly strong...
To do drawings? to write long essays?
Look, here's six fingers. Have a particularly strong responsibility for ensuring the safety of these AI systems, including through systems for safety testing, through evaluations, and by other appropriate measures. We encourage all relevant actors to provide context-appropriate transparency and blah, blah, blah. So here it comes down to these two points. In the context of our cooperation and to inform...
What are you reading from?
I'm reading from the Bletchley Declaration.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, come on. I mean, this is a declaration. I like reading declarations. You know, it's like the Declaration of Independence.
I do declare. That's the way it should start.
No, we affirm that whilst in the context of our cooperation and to inform action at the national and international levels, our agenda for addressing frontier AI risk, it's frontier AI risk. We'll focus on 2 points. Identifying AI safety risks of shared concern. Building a shared scientific and evidence-based understanding of these risks, which we did not hear, and sustaining that understanding as capabilities continue to increase in the context of a wider global approach to understanding the impact of AI in our societies.
Woo!
That was written by ChatGPT. There's no doubt about it. And 2, building respective risk-based policies across our countries to ensure safety in light of such risks, collaborating as appropriate while recognizing our approaches may differ based on national circumstances and applicable legal frameworks. This includes, alongside increased transparency by private actors, developing frontier AI capabilities, appropriate evaluation.
Frontier thing?
Oh, crap.
You know, you might be right, because I took this Bletchley thing, and listening to all the clips about it and the clips I brought, as a drinking club, because they went up to this, you know, it's a, and they keep talking about how pretty it is. Yeah. It's idyllic. We're in idyllic Bletchley. And there's a bunch of losers, and they're all, it's a drinking club. And I wouldn't be surprised if, as a joke, because I would do it, Let's have ChatGPT write the declaration.
We'll have it write a Bletchley declaration. Exactly. Let's play your clips. I got some more after that.
All right. This is kind of a rundown with, they don't go anywhere, of course, because nothing really comes of any of this stuff. It's just a bunch of ninnies running around with their hair on fire. But let's start with clip one.
Delegates from 28 countries, including the U.S. and China, gathered today at a bucolic English country estate. They gathered to sound an alarm about AI, artificial intelligence. They pledged to work together to contain what they call the potentially catastrophic risks posed by this technology. Well, NPR's Lauren Freyer has been covering this two-day summit of politicians and tech CEOs. Hey there, Lauren.
Hi.
I want to start with a very basic question. When we say they're gathered, they're talking AI, what do they mean? What has them so worried that they've all come together?
Yeah, so there's a lot of like talk about existential threats. And the UK Prime Minister Rishi Sunak has actually said he's literally worried about humanity losing control of computers. Delegates are talking about the role of AI in bioweapons, cyber attacks, making the global financial system go haywire, threats to democracy. Haywire. But AI is also stuff that like you might be familiar with, language models, things like ChatGPT, Google Translate, and also tools that like your bank may be using to evaluate loan applications, read your medical records. Vice President Kamala Harris is in town for this summit, and she gave a speech today at the U.S. Embassy in London where she gave some real-world examples.
Oh. Consider, for example, when a senior is kicked off his healthcare plan because of a faulty AI algorithm. Is that not existential for him?
Oh, goodness. Existential
now,
for him.
Of course, I cut it there because...
yeah, because she's annoying.
Because she's an idiot. Yeah. Now, this has happened with just casually. This happens all the time. This has nothing to do with AI.
No, it's a stupid algorithm that's already in use.
So some guy got kicked off his healthcare plan. He has to go through a rigmarole to get it. It's like losing your credit score being off because of whatever, or somebody stealing your like identity. None of this has anything to do with AI. It's real world issues that have been going on forever. And now it's just going to be easier to blame it on AI.
Yep.
So anyway, so this is the NPR report. I thought they handled it kind of lightly, like they weren't taking it too seriously. And they were more interested in the fact that it's bucolic to be out there in Bletchley. You go to these places, there's plenty of them in the English countryside, and they have meetings in them. I've been to more than a couple when I was writing for PC Magazine UK, and it's gorgeous. You know, you go in there and it's just these beautiful places, and it's a drinking club.
You know what's you know what you can hear there? A rustle in the hedgerow. All right, number two.
So she talked about people being victimized by deep fakes, like fake explicit photographs, or people are even thrown in prison because of biased AI facial recognition software.
Biased.
So she talked about the need to regulate all of that stuff without stifling innovation.
Yeah, that's the challenge. Okay, so we've got the American vice president there, the British prime minister, Prime Minister Sunak, everybody talking about it. I guess the question that's always hanging over this is what can they actually do? What are they going to do?
Yeah, so they can issue a joint declaration, which they did today. But, you know, there's no global regulatory body. There's nothing binding here. The summit is a success in terms of just bringing these people together. And it goes beyond politicians. I consulted an AI expert, Nina Schick, and she says a major role is going to have to be played by U.S. tech companies.
Who is this Nina Schick? When did she come on the scene? Nina Schick.
Yeah, we got another one. Here she comes.
Primarily because the knowledge in terms of what is actually happening, how are these systems built, what's under the hood, who can understand them, is not going to come from government alone. Industry needs to be a part of this conversation.
And so to that end, Elon Musk.
Hold on a second. Nina Schick, who looks like she's about 30, bit of an AOC look, ninaschick.org. Nina Schick.
Okay, hold on.
Is an author, advisor, and speaker specializing in generative AI. She has
out of the blue.
Oh yeah, deep fakes. Let's see, deep fakes. What's she? Deep fakes are the first viral form of generative AI. This is where the story begins. Oh, she's an expert. But what's her bio, Nina Schick? Yeah. Nina Schick. Where's your bio? Oh, she doesn't.
Yeah, she does have an AI. AI.
AOC.
She has an AI. She looks like AI.
Yeah, she does.
But she looks a little like AOC.
Nina advises several AI and technology companies, including TruePic, the first to build media authentication technology, and Synthesia, the world's
this
first.
This is interesting. She was born in Kathmandu,
not to Nepal. Be trusted. Nina's debut book, Deep Fakes, was released in 2020, translated into 5 languages. She's a seasoned media commentator. Oh, can we call us that ourselves? I'm a seasoned media commentator, just so you know.
Put some salt on you.
All right, here we go.
Is not going to come from government alone. Industry needs to be a part of this conversation.
She has advised leaders, including Joe Biden, the president
that
of
must
the United
have been
States,
a kick.
And Anders Fogh Rasmussen, the former Secretary General of NATO. She speaks 7 languages and calls London, Berlin, and Kathmandu home. She's an agent. I wouldn't have her on the show.
Wait, let me think. London, Berlin, and Kathmandu is her where she calls home?
Yeah, 3 homes.
Yeah. Yeah. MI6, she graduated from Cambridge, so I'm going
there
MI6.
Go. There we go. Let's listen to her again and we'll be quiet.
Primarily because the knowledge in terms of what is actually happening, how are these systems built, what's under the hood, who can understand them, is not going to come from government alone. Industry needs to be a part of this conversation.
And so to that end, Elon Musk is participating. Representatives of Google, Amazon, Meta, Microsoft are all attending this summit.
Well, and that prompts me to ask you about the venue I mentioned at the top. They were all meeting in this somewhat unlikely setting, a bucolic English country estate. This is not just any English country estate, though. Explain.
It's gorgeous.
It's gorgeous.
Gorgeous.
It's gorgeous, I tell you. It's bucolic. What does bucolic even mean?
It means it's a mind kind of, it's I like idyllic. It's only different. It's got more birds. And there's chirping. There's a lot of chirping, and there's like deer. There's like a lamb, you know, in a very green field.
Just a lamb?
A lamb and maybe a horse.
Oh, man, wasn't it? No goats?
No, goats are yet generally not in bucolic because they make too much racket.
Yeah, it is indeed. The definition is idyllic rustic, a pleasant bucolic scene. Speak English, lady. Bucolic. Okay.
So I don't know how where we ended there, but let's go to clip 3.
It's gorgeous. It's called Bletchley Park. It's a sprawling brick and stone manor house. And it was once the top secret home of World War II codebreakers, where some of the sort of best and brightest mathematicians, including one named Alan Turing, cracked the Nazis' Enigma code and helped win the war. The 2014 movie Imitation Game, it's there. And so Bletchley had a role in the birthplace of some of the earliest programmable computers. And the questions that Alan Turing asked at Bletchley literally 85 years ago, can computers think, can they imitate humans, are being talked about again in that very same venue.
Fascinating.
John, is fascinating.
Fascinating.
Well, not everybody is on board with this. In fact, the co-founder of Google Brain, which merged, I guess, with IBM's Big Blue something, he says, and this is in the Business Insider, big tech companies are inflating fears about the risks of AI wiping out humanity because they want to dominate the market. Of course.
Well, he's got the right idea.
Of course.
And what else is new?
Andrew Ng, an adjunct professor at Stanford University, soon to be ex-adjunct professor at Stanford University, who taught OpenAI CEO Sam Altman, he taught the guy, told the Australian Financial Review that the biggest tech companies hope to trigger strict regulation with, quote, the bad idea that AI could make us go extinct. There are definitely large tech companies that would rather not have to try to compete with open source. So they're creating fear of AI leading to human extinction. Now, remember, the Lambda model was put out by Meta in open source. And now I'm running AI in my own little Raspberry Pi here at home with the same models. Well, not the same, but, you know, the same ChatGPT-3 models. I have that for sure and probably a little bit above that. And I'm not, and he's not the only one that says this is bull crap. Here's what is her name? This is Meredith Whitaker. She's the president of Signal. She was at a Washington Post AI summit. And here's what she had to say.
But generative AI is not actually that useful. What happened in January was that technology, or sort of a framework for building models that had been developed in 2017, was sort of put online with an interface by Microsoft/OpenAI, who have to be understood as the same entity, right? And the ChatGPT interface kind of gave people a simulated experience of like, oh my God, I'm talking to kind of a human. It's spitting out nonsense, but it's spitting it out. And this feels kind of sentient, right? And right. On the backs of this right. advertisement for their GPT-8. Yeah,
I like her a lot, but the right thing is rampant.
AI, which right. they sell through their Azure cloud services. They sort of generated an entire new hyped narrative around generative AI as this sort of future-facing technology that's going to change every industry. But what does it do, right? It, you know, it right. presents visual images that are often, you know, stolen from artists or like far too close for comfort. And it presents plausible text, right? It infers right. what's the right. sort of plausible response to a prompt based on, you know, mountains of data from the internet, the Reddits, the 4chans, you know, the storm front is in there, as Natasha's work has shown, you know, and kind of presents text that looks plausible but has no relationship to facts, has no relationship to reality, has no citations, right? So what is this right. useful for? It's not useful in most right. serious contexts. Yeah, you could, you know, replace a junior copywriter, but you better have a senior copywriter who's checking that text because it's going to be janky.
I love the term janky.
That and she's right.
Yes, my teeth used to be janky. Janky is a very valid term. So she's completely right. I spent 2 days really trying to figure out what they were trying to do with this executive order. It is a monstrous executive order. When they had those behind closed doors meetings with Chuck Schumer, I think every single tech CEO or the smartest brains and people in the universe had their lobbyists there to write this thing. And from what I can tell, they completely are writing what the Google Brain co-founder guy says. We don't want anyone competing with us. That's exactly what I see. But I think it's even worse because they have defined certain terms to be so broad that you can pretty much say, if you start a social media network and it is of X size, which would mean it would be competing with them, and they go right down to the number of machines, how many gigabits of bandwidth between the machines, what kind of computational power it would have, which kind of equals, you know, Amazon, AWS services, Google Cloud, Azure, all this stuff, then you would be deemed artificial intelligence and thus would have to adhere to the regulation. These guys, they know that they have nothing left. They got nothing in the pipeline. They have, you know, advertising is on the downturn. It may come back up again, but it's not going to be what it was. They wanted to solidify their spot with this bull crap, which costs just as much as they might make off it. There's no advertising business model that we've seen yet, but yet this is, we need all kinds of incredible money and institutions and the government to be all over this to protect the people from the horrible things that could go wrong if you're as big as we are. So they've defined these terms, and the three that I think are most important are these. Artificial intelligence. So this is now a temporarily legal definition of what artificial intelligence is, because it's an executive order. Of course, the next president comes in can get rid of it, and I hope whoever it is does. The term artificial intelligence, or AI, has the meaning set forth in 15 U.S. Code 94013. I'll get to that in a moment. : A machine-based system that can, for a given set of human-defined objectives, make predictions, recommendations, or decisions influencing real or virtual environments. Well, bull crap. That's an algo. That's literally an algo. Artificial intelligence systems use machine and human-based inputs, so it's not autonomous, to perceive real and virtual environments, abstract such perceptions into models through analysis in an automated manner, and use model inference to formulate options for information or action. What does that sound like to you?
What?
Well, listen to this clip, and it's right in here.
It's here that the first ever global summit on AI safety is taking place, bringing together top officials from 28 countries with executives from cutting-edge tech firms. Prime Minister Rishi Sunak hoping to position the UK as a leader in the rapidly developing field.
Why not? But there can be no serious strategy for AI without at least trying to engage all of the world's leading AI powers.
Sunak is pushing for a global AI regulation advisory board based on the UN's Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change.
Oh, brother.
They want to regulate
this. Yeah, they
want
a UN body.
Yeah, and like climate change, IPCC, which is a bonanza of money, government money. This is what they want. Yes. More meetings all around the world. COP29 is on deck. Oh, man, they want to have fun. And they want
drinking club.
Yes, but a very profitable drinking club. Look at how we've been.
Why just drink when you can make money while you're drinking?
Look at how we've been frightened into believing climate change is all. It's the same terminology. We can just guess exactly what they're going to say and exactly what they're going to do. So I thought it would be fun to put this definition through my own AI running here at home and ask what it thought of it. Well, the AI, which is probably equivalent to GPT 3.5, says this definition is quite broad, but it also captures a wide range of technologies under its umbrella term artificial intelligence. For example, natural language processing systems use AI technologies to analyze textual inputs from humans in order to make predictions. There's your Siri. No more Siri, not on scale, not at our scale. Then you have to go through regulations. Similarly, machine learning algorithms can be used for predictive modeling and decision-making tasks that involve data analysis of real-world events, such as weather patterns or stock market trends. They want to corner the market, and they will, with this stupid administration, we'll write this up. The next definition, the term AI model, according to the executive order, the AI model means a component of an information system that implements AI technology and uses computational, statistical, or machine learning techniques to produce outputs from a given set of inputs. Isn't this the basis of computing? I'm asking you. Is this not
yes,
the basis?
It is.
This is insane what these people are talking about.
Well,
it is. This is
I looked over that thing and I thought there was one onerous moment in the whole document that I was perked me up.
Sure. What was that?
Is anybody involved in any of this? Even at the lowest level, it says in that document that all red team results
yes.
have to be turned over to the government.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for people out there who want to know what that means, that there's things called penetration testing where you check to see how strong your systems are. And then there's a thing, which I don't know why they named it this, but it's called red team. And red team goes beyond penetration testing. Coble, I think, gets involved in this.
It's what he does.
Because he gets hired and he has to literally, in some instances, break into a company.
Yeah.
Illegally, but it's legal, but it's illegal at the same time. Break into the company and then go and fish around in their systems. You have to turn those results of any red team analysis are so... they're so proprietary and dangerous that you're giving the government the back door to your entire system if you do that. And they're now requiring it by this executive order. I found that to be just overlooked by everybody and extremely onerous. And they should be sued for it. This executive order is no good.
Oh, no. But it's completely written by lobbyists and donors and lobbyists. I love the term generative AI, which is a class of AI models that emulate the structure and characteristics of input data in order to generate derived synthetic content. This can include images, videos, audio, text, and other digital content. And then they go into this whole section about who who has to, you know, give the red team results to the government. And it's basically anybody who's trying to compete with them. Literally, they talk about if you have so many integer calculations per second, so many billions of rows in your model. I mean, it's unbelievable.
No, you're right. This is a scam perpetrated by Meta and Google.
Yes.
And who, and maybe, I don't know.
Microsoft,
right. Yeah. Microsoft, Meta, and Google, the big three.
It's like the Digital Patriot Act, this thing is. It's like, give it all to us. We control you now.
Yeah.
And then, of course, to get the public on board, well, let's roll out some fun human interest stories, shall we?
53 years after splitting up, they're back. It's a reunion few could have imagined since only two are still alive. But the Beatles are releasing a new single featuring all four band members thanks to artificial intelligence.
It's the last song that my dad and Paul and George and Ringo will get to make together.
Now and Then was written and sung by John Lennon in the late 1970s. 24 years later, his widow, Yoko Ono, gave the demo to Paul McCartney. But back then, it was impossible to separate Lennon's vocals and piano to work alongside new recorded parts. Last year, AI made that possible.
Paul called me up and said he'd like to work on Now and Then. He put the bass on, I put the drums on.
In the city of Liverpool, where it all began, fans are eager to hear the result.
I can't wait to hear the song. I hope it's done tastefully. I hope it is bringing them up with something that they have created together, collaboratively, and the technology just makes it happen.
It was in this room that the Beatles performed for the very first time. The venue and the city itself attracts fans from around the world.
But wait!
The physical release of Now and Then also comes ahead of new editions of the Beatles' Red Album and Blue Album, expanded to cover their entire singles discography.
So they so this is now artificial intelligence, where
which audio guys have been able to do this.
Thank you.
For decades.
Thank you. And even on demos, Sir George Martin was well known. He was, you know, one of the first guys that did multi-tracks. They have multi-tracks, or as we call it today, stems. And even that, you can go online. There's open source. I'll tell you which is. There's an open source value for value even based system called, there it is, vocalremover.org. And you can throw in any song you want. You can remove the music or remove the vocals with AI. It's because this is what they want to stop. The fact that some dude open source can, you can do that, you little puny man, vocalremover.org. You can take your little donations for that, but don't you try to compete with us, because then you'll have to red team your results. That's what this, it's disgusting. This should be, that someone should challenge this. We need to challenge this with the Fredericksburg Declaration.
I think the Fredericksburg Declaration should we can do more than one of these.
Oh, yeah.
So let's make this one specifically about that executive order.
Okay. I like it. I like the idea. We need to do something. I mean, we need to take a stand. We need to take a stand.
What?
We need to take a stand.
You, me, what? Do what?
Now, moving on. Did you see the ARC conference this weekend that was taking place in the O2 Arena in England, in London?
I know nothing about the ARC conference in the O2 Arena.
This is
a nice arena.
Well, it's not in the, it wasn't in the arena itself, but it was, one of the, it's
big. A little room nearby.
A little room nearby, but it sounds good. In the O2. This is the Alliance for Responsible Citizenship. This is Jordan Peterson's anti-World Economic Forum thing. You haven't followed this at all?
I have not followed this at all. I've not followed much of what Peterson's been up to because ever since he became this angry man.
Yeah, so
ever since he got off drugs, almost killed himself getting off drugs. He's become this, he got really this grouch.
He got really boring after he got off the drugs. So this is it's a bit polarizing because of the people involved. So it really was spearheaded by him and What is the name? She, Baroness Philippa, something or other. Baroness Philippa. And you know, they've pretty much gathered a whole lot of alternative media people.
Were we invited?
No. Philippa Stroud. There you go. Baroness Philippa Stroud, who is the co-founder and CEO of ARC, member of the House of Lords, chair of the Social Metrics Commission. And it's interesting because they have a lot. It sounds really good on paper. And, you know, it's like, let me just give you their, actually, I have their pitch, but about ARC, the Alliance for Responsible Citizenship is an international community with a vision for a better world where every citizen can prosper, contribute, and flourish.
Didn't Karl Marx say something similar?
You know, people look at the, and then they had live stream all weekend. There's videos. This is the most important speech you've ever heard. You know, they had Ayaan Hirsi Ali on a panel. Peterson led the whole thing. He had the most heinous jacket on, where half was red, half was blue.
He's wearing this half and half jacket.
It's hideous.
I've seen it a couple of times, and it's like,
no, it's just,
why are you wearing this?
No, it's just no. Do you want to hear a little bit of their promo reel?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
I'm
still saying no to the jacket.
No, the jacket is a hard pass. Just no to the jacket.
We at the Alliance for Responsible Citizenship do not believe that humanity is necessarily and inevitably teetering on the brink of apocalyptic disaster. We do not believe that we are beings primarily motivated by lust for power and the desire to dominate. We do not regard ourselves or our fellow citizens as destructive forces living in an alien relationship to the pristine and pure natural.
You saying something?
I didn't say anything.
No.
World.
If you look out into the world at the moment, there are a series of narratives out there, these stories that we're telling ourselves that are actually determining a lot of our global behavior. If you've got children, you're exposed to some of this in a really visceral way, and you see your children coming home fearful about the future. There's this sort of cataclysmic belief that the future is dangerous, and somehow we are to blame.
There is an epidemic mental health crisis worldwide, in great part due to the breakdown of the social fabric and confusion over values, where economic prosperity, work, and materialism is prioritized over family.
And so the despair that we see around us, right, the breakdown of all of these social connections is related to a vision of the human being, which sees the person as just a consumer. Promoting that, reducing humans to consumers, or criticizing it and criticizing humans for being parasites on the world.
Okay, so that's kind of the issue part of this promo reel. I am not a fan of music like this, you know, big bombastic stuff.
Yeah, it's also lower key music played in a kind of a sad note. It's just to elicit an emotional response to the words being said.
And what would you do?
Shit.
And what would you do in the next piece with the music?
Well, if I was playing that at the beginning, which is the bad side, I would play the up-tempo stuff to say what you're going to do.
But what is a best story? What is the better story that we can tell that will enable us to walk forward the way we need to walk forward as societies and nations?
Here we go.
Is really going to be the big theme.
Bring in the violence.
It's time to bring a more optimistic vision and to believe in ourselves, in our civilization, in the things that made it such an extraordinary civilization.
We need to formulate a different vision. And I think that we have in our traditions, we have in our great theological movements of the West in the past 2,000 years, we have the possibility of formulating a different vision of humans. Humans that exist in love with each other, that are submitted to the transcendent good, and that can work together towards a better future.
The rejection of our traditional beliefs have not produced viable alternative narratives, only deconstructionist theories. We must reinvigorate our sense of citizenship. We must encourage one another to serve, to step up, to lead with courage wherever leadership is needed. The ARC network that I'm a part of will seek to address these goals and more.
If we get this right, if we can give people confidence again in our identity as people and communities and nations, then we'll start to reverse some of the more negative trends that have accompanied the more positive ones. So hopefully it can have a very long-lasting impact.
Right now, I'm very hopeful. That music got me all hopeful. I'm up. How about you? Are you up? You feeling up?
God, no.
There's also a lot of religious imagery, iconic type things. You can hear there's an undertone of that, although they never specifically address it. And here's the payoff. This is the last beat. It's a little shorter of the promo reel. This is, I guess, what they're going to do. They're going to tell us now. This is horrible. We have a mental health crisis, not because of all our children are on SSRIs, but obviously telling people about climate change is frightening and it frightens the kids and we're all going to die. But we need to step up as citizens. And what is ARC going to do for us?
ARC is emerging already as a wonderful community of people who are just full of hope for the way forward and want to bring in a different culture and a different vision for where we can go as a people.
I believe in great minds meeting and looking together for solutions. You cannot overestimate the impact of an idea.
There is a greater narrative that we can all chime in on for the things that we all want together, which is human flourishing, human prosperity, human well-being, all moored to hope.
We posit that men and women of faith and decisiveness made in the image of God can arrange their affairs with care and attention so that abundance and opportunity could be available for all. We hope to encourage the development of an alternative pathway uphill out of both tyranny and the desert, stabilizing, unifying, and compelling to men and women of sound judgment and free will. Welcome aboard the ARC.
Oh my God. Peterson is going to be so, when he comes to his senses, is going to be so embarrassed by this utopian bullcrap that he's part of. He's going to have to go on an apology tour.
I mean,
that is the worst thing I've ever heard.
So there's these shots of him standing, you know, over a huge canyon, and there's a drone shot, and he's standing there almost like Moses. I mean, Peterson may be the Antichrist for all we know, but I did a little bit of research, and I say that only in biblical context. Because this is something really, really irks me about what's going on here. But now looking, because this is a massive conference. There's money behind this. So first, a little bit.
Yeah, about, who?
Yeah, okay, I found out for us. So the Alliance for Responsible Citizenship was launched by Peterson, includes what we call public intellectuals. Arthur Brooks, Niall Ferguson, Bjorn Lomborg.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. The old public intellectual, a term which is fairly recent, by the way, and more or less created by guys like Peterson.
Yes, like the intellectual dark web.
When I was a kid.
Oh, yeah.
Here
we go.
There was no such thing as I never heard the term public intellectual until about a decade ago.
Well,
in fact, I should check it out on a Google Ngram. And I'm sure public intellectual is a fairly new creation. I'll do that while you're talking.
So this is the group behind this is the Legatum Group, the Legatum Institute, LEGATUM.
Okay.
And the Legatum Institute was described by the Financial Times as the intellectual heart of Brexit. So this is where all this is coming from.
Oh, okay.
And they also are connected to GB News, which makes total sense. So, you know, we've got all the GB News. You know, that's the thing that Mark Stein was on. And
okay.
You know, they have fun stories. It's definitely a counter narrative in the UK. But so, yeah. You know, so far, I mean, this feels like Russell Brand. It feels like all of these kind of people. And if you look at the advisory board, let me see if I can find some interesting people here. So Arthur C. Brooks, he's a William Henry Bloomberg professor. We've got Barry Strauss, military historian on ancient Greece. Bjorn Lomborg, with the Copenhagen Consensus think tank. We've got, Dan Crenshaw, Eye Patch McCain, he's in there. James Orr, associate professor of philosophy of religion. We've got, would you look at that? We've got Mike Johnson, our new Speaker of the House. He's a member of it. Michael Schellenberger, of course, part of the Westminster Declaration. Mike Lee, Senator Mike Lee from Utah. Isn't he a spook? Niall Ferguson, Philippa Stroud. I mean, Tony Abbott, Victor Davis Hanson, Vivek Ramaswamy. And Winston Marshall, a Grammy award winning musician. It's just like, I'm missing Yo-Yo Ma. That's the only one they didn't get in there.
You didn't dig deep enough. Let me stop you with this thing, my comment, which was, I've got the engram up for public intellectual.
Mm-hmm.
The term never existed before 1985 and has grown just kind of exponentially and peaked in 2003 and now is leveled off at a very high rate.
Interesting.
So it's some new thing. So it's when we start seeing these new terms introduced all of a sudden and people are in the group suddenly and never existed before, I would say that something's up with that.
So the Legatum Institute is funded by the Legatum Group, which includes an investment firm, Legatum Capital, run out of the United Arab Emirates.
Oh, a UAE operation.
Yes. And they fund things like the Freedom Fund, the Ebola Crisis Fund.
They got tons of money.
They have a lot of money.
There's a money grab by these public intellectuals. Okay, well, good for them.
They also have a stance on climate change. The population growth, not capitalism, is the biggest cause of climate change. The best way to save the planet is to give women more control over their own fertility. So there's all kinds of things here that I just don't like. It's funny. Trollum says, Curry sounds jealous. No, believe me, I'm not jealous of this at
jealous
all.
Jealous of what?
I don't know, but I think we're looking at some
false. That we haven't latched on to one of these money sinkholes?
Yes. I think that there's false idols here that we need to be careful of. And I was totally irked when I saw Eva Vlaardingerbroek, who is the cute Dutch blonde who rose to fame through Tucker Carlson when during the Dutch farmer protests.
She was that group.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think were the only one to debunk it.
Well, no, she's not a member of that group, but she's actually engaged in getting married to Matt Witt, who's part of the PragerU. So,
PragerU.
So this is the group, and they interviewed her, and I'm kind of happy because what she said here mirrors, I think, my initial thinking about, so what is this group really doing? I totally understand they got her on board. I mean, Peterson is a very, he's a very convincing guy. I can see where people are just get all on board with him. But even, ever since the drugs, I mean, he uses a lot of words. It's like, there's no joking anymore. There's no fun. It's all just blah. Anyway, I wanted to play this little piece by her because I think this is exactly what this group is. Because watching for 2 days, I saw absolutely zero ideas or solutions or here's what we're going to do other than we're the public intellectuals. We recognize a problem. Well, yeah, do a podcast.
Well, I'm here, obviously, when Jordan Peterson announced that he was starting a counter movement, basically, to the World Economic Forum, it immediately sparked my interest because although I'm not a fan necessarily of centralized organizations, the essence of this is not that. It's actually to bring together people who look at power in a more decentralized, more nationalist way, bring them together to fight, again, a global agenda, right? So it's in essence the opposite idea of the World Economic Forum, even though we do have to conspire together, in order to exchange ideas. And I really like that for Because of the fact that it's active, you know, we're doing something, and there's a lot of talk on the conservative side, but this is something where people can actually join and exchange ideas and take action and hopefully spread the word beyond social media. So I really like it for that reason. The focus, obviously, on responsible citizenship is a very different idea than what the World Economic Forum predicates. They, for them, all of the political ideology that they're based on, everything left-wing anyway, anything neo-Marxist, it's always outside of yourself, right? It's always the system that is oppressive. It's racism or the patriarchy or anything, climate, you know, it's always anything that is outside of your own control. And I think what Peterson opened with today, saying, no, you have agency over your own life, and that's where you need to get started, is a really good message and one that we desperately need. So I'm curious to see how this will develop and what will come from, you know, a meeting like this, because it can't just be talking. We need to be wary of that. But I really, really like the idea.
Yeah, it's just talking.
You know, the other thing is, she kind of, her comment that this is the counter to the World Economic Forum, yes, kind of belies the fact that the World Economic Forum is, until recently, really brought together prime minister, CEOs, mm-hmm, of major corporations that had influence,
public
secretaries of state, secretaries of finance, World Bank guys. It was like done for it was an economic forum. It's, yes, only recently that it's become this screwy thing. And that's not what these guys, this is a bunch of public, quote unquote, public intellectuals who, quote, who in my opinion, are just blowhards that like to talk, and they're mic hogs in many instances. And it's point. And what's the point of it? What's it supposed to do? Oh, we take control of our own lives.
Yeah.
I mean, and the World Economic Forum's against it. This is not the way things are really structured. The World Economic Forum and all these things we talk about are largely a joke. So this is a counter joke?
Well, and because I was talking to Tina about it, she says, well, you know, it is, at least it's not, you know, they're against the World Economic Forum. But yeah, but what are they really saying? It's like, you know, They're kind of half, there's a half Catholic Christian vibe to it, which is not really spoken of. But then it's like, you know, be the individual, be the, you know, either all in on that or not. Be the individual, be an upstanding citizen, but don't be global. I think you're right. I think it feels like mic hogs, and there's lots of money flowing into this. There's a lot of money for it. And you know, the fact that the money comes from the same people who organize and politically organized Brexit means it's a political group. There's political money behind this. I'm not saying I disagree with Brexit. Obviously, I don't. I thought it was great. I thought it was phenomenal to see that. But, you know, you got to be honest about it. The UAE money source just smells.
Well, I'm looking at their website, too, and the website is... The only way I can describe it, people should go to it's a
ArcForum.
Google Arc, and you'll find it.
ArcForum.org.
It is corny. It is overproduced. All the stock art is corny. It's just lame. It's super lame. And the fact that some of these people are attaching their names to this is just an embarrassment.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, what are they cutting here? There's like a running movie at the beginning with, you know, some the ARC of the moral universe is long, but it bends toward justice. What does that even mean?
That's what I'm talking about. It's these big structured sentences. Then I guess it sounds better if you're wearing.
And they're cutting grapes off of a vine. What does that have to do with anything?
That's a biblical thing. This is what I mean. It's like it's part religious.
Well, that's the only biblical thing, because they're showing somebody playing the piano, somebody harvesting wheat, couple of kids jumping up and down in a puddle. I mean, the whole thing stinks. It stinks.
No, I'm glad we agree. because it bothers me.
Wait a minute. You think that I would even think this was good?
No, no. You boil it down to the truth of it. It stinks.
Well, I got it down to one word.
It stinks. It stinks. You know, their ideas, restoring the foundations of our civilization, a better story for the future, addressing the challenges of our time, breaking the inevitable path. Yeah, okay. Blah, 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 blah. Why we need a better story. I know, but these are all...
They left the one out soaking the UAE for as much as we can get.
But, you know, but this has been my problem with like the alternative media for a while. Everybody goes on each other's podcasts, you know, and I'll pull them all, you know, Megyn Kelly and Victor Davis Hanson and Tim Pool. And, you know, they just go around and around and around. And then they've created this belief, this belief in themselves that they're changing something. Yeah. And it just doesn't feel legit. You know, look, I know we're outside of that because we don't wear headphones and have the mics on our face and in video. That's why we'll never be a part of it. But I don't think it's something you want to be a part of. You know, it feels disingenuous. I can't put my finger on it other than what you said. It stinks of something weird. So,
and I don't like the logo. ARC, the ARC with the little thing shooting like a...
And then welcome aboard the ARC. I'm like, okay, now we're Noah's Ark.
Yeah,
okay.
Well, there's your religious connection. Welcome aboard the ARC.
Now we're good. Now we're good to go.
That's a pun,
yeah,
which is the lowest form of humor.
Yeah. Anyway, eyes on ARC. We got to make sure we know what's going on.
This is
going
to go nowhere.
Well...
I mean, it's okay.
I don't know.
Well, that's a good find. I'll give you 10 points for that one.
Well, thank you. I'll give you 1 point back. Find. I'll give you 1 point back for the it stinks. So I'll take 9. It
stinks.
You take one. It stinks.
Okay.
All right. What you got?
Well, I'm just on this website.
It's bugging you, isn't it? What you got on Mike Johnson?
Well, let's talk about Mike Johnson since you mentioned him.
Yes, I want to talk about it. That's good.
I caught Kash Patel, who I really do like as an analyst.
Oh, you do? Do you?
I do. Do
you really do like him?
I do.
Him.
Do
you
like really him do as an like analyst? Him.
Oh, okay.
And I think "do" is the right word. And he is on NTD talking about what Johnson may or may not be able to accomplish, and I think it was worth listening to, and so I made a clip of it.
Kash Patel, thank you so much for joining us. Good to be back on the show. The House has...
We said this is the new Speaker of the House, the crazy religious guy.
...elected Mike a Johnson, Speaker,
yeah,
Mike Johnson.
Part of ARC, apparently.
I know. I can just see Mike Johnson.
That's the one thing that they can bitch and moan about his religiosity and all the rest of it, which he doesn't really exhibit at all, except his haircut, maybe. But this ARC thing bothers me.
Yeah, I mean, if you're on the same website with Eyepatch McCain, Dan Crenshaw, I mean, you got some soul searching to do.
Kash Patel, thank you so much for joining us. Good to be back on the show. The House has elected a Speaker, Mike Johnson. He got unanimous consent from the Republicans. This is after 3 weeks without a Speaker. Why do you think Mike Johnson won where Scalise, Jordan, and Emmer failed?
Look, this isn't an overnight process. You know, I know Speaker Johnson. He's a great guy. We've worked together in the past. And in my opinion, what I think you saw is this notion that people who have been in Washington forever and co-opted by the lobbyists and defense industrial complex and big public interest, their tenure at running Washington, D.C., at least for the Republican Party, has come to an end. And when we look back in the mirror and say, you know, whether or not you like what Representative Gates did or not, that was the instigating moment. And you saw a lot of people, especially in conservative media circles, rise up and actually participate in this conversation. And that's why I think you saw so many votes for different candidates beforehand. And what you saw in Speaker-elect Mike Johnson is a different candidate emerge, someone who will be critical of the establishment and who has in the past supported, quite arduously President Trump. And those other individuals don't have that track record. So it's going to be a different speakership for sure. We'll just see if he's co-opted by the swamp or he takes the swamp over.
No, oh, that's a good point. That's a good point. He's young enough to be totally co-opted by the swamp.
Yeah, he is.
Could totally happen to him.
But being a true religious person, the likelihood is less because he's not guided by the greed. Or you'd hope.
Yeah. You don't know. The enemy is always on the prowl.
You never know. So here we go. Part two.
To your point, during the 2020 election, Johnson voted against certifying the Electoral College votes in Arizona and Pennsylvania. And after Biden won the presidency, he called Trump, telling him to keep fighting. How do you see Johnson uniting the Republican Party, as it were?
Well, the Republican Party has changed. The Republican Party has jettisoned the likes of, whether you like them or dislike them, Liz Cheney, Adam Kinzinger, and other folks. The Republican Party has changed since Donald Trump became president. And a lot of people don't want to accept that, the Karl Roves of the world. But the reality is, it's the right of the Republican Party to change. And what you saw today in Speaker-elect Mike Johnson is a momentous, prodigious change in the way the Republican Party is shaped. And by the way, you also saw him win by a vote margin of 220. Every single Republican voted for him without the conditions that were attached to Speaker McCarthy's bid. That must mean everyone in Congress at least has a huge amount of respect for him, but believes he'll get the job done. And I think the Republican Party will continue to change. It's not unlike the Democratic Party when it changes over time. This is allowed to happen in this country. And, you know, when Speaker Pelosi or Hakeem Jeffries and Secretary of State Clinton challenged the election and refused to concede it in other elections, that was their right to do so under the First Amendment freedom of speech. And that was Mike Johnson's right to do so with President Trump.
No. He's an election denier. That's not the same thing. How quickly they forget.
All right, let's wrap it with this. This is a long interview. I only took these three clips, and I can kind of maybe summarize some other stuff he said, but I think that clip three brings a little bit to the fore.
Do you see the House being more aggressive on this front with Johnson as Speaker, especially with the 2024 election race heating up?
Well, that would be my advice to him. I mean, he has the majority. He's got the gavels. He can extend subpoena power to the chairman and women. He can call for votes of contempt of Congress for individuals like Chris Ray and Merrick Garland, who have already violated congressional subpoenas. And the precedent laid out by the Democratic January 6th committee was those people get prosecuted by the DOJ. Or we start defunding some piece of those organizations. So Speaker Johnson has that ability to do that. He can empower those chairmen and chairwomen. He can make the subpoena process swifter, but he's also got to put some teeth behind it. You can issue all the subpoenas you want, and Chris Ray and Merrick Garland have basically just thrown them in the trash. And this is a federal contempt of proceeding document, and the Republicans have not acted on it. So hopefully Speaker Johnson will launch into that, because at the end of the day, what the American public deserves is the truth. Why is the FBI and DOJ hiding these documents, whether it's Hunter Biden, Joe Biden, Donald Trump, or what have you? Put it all out there so we can vote based on the truth.
You know, if Speaker Johnson goes down that route and the first big thing he does is the Hunter Biden stuff, then it's lost. I mean, there's so much more he could be doing, don't you think?
Well, the thing is that I think by giving these committee heads the subpoena powers that he has to delegate, I guess, and letting them go nuts, and it's really not his, he's not connected to any of that, I think would be good.
Well,
because it would create a carnival, but
oh yeah,
it's very entertaining. I get a kick out of it.
What's interesting is in this day and age where, you know, particularly with the situation in the Middle East, we've got people talking about it's horrible, there's anti-Semitism, people attacking people. You know, Jews attacking Jews, Islamophobia attacking Muslims. Apparently, Christians are okay.
Well, that's nothing new.
Well, but Jen Psaki did a fantastic job. I think, really, if you want to attack someone like a Mike Johnson, what she did on her, what's her show? Inside with Jen Psaki.
It's unwatchable, but you managed to watch one. Good.
So let's take a few minutes to talk about this new speaker. First glance, Mike Johnson does seem fine, fine-ish. Conservative, yes, but he once started a civility caucus with a Democrat. And I mean, if nothing else, he wears a suit and has glasses. How threatening can this guy actually be?
Oh, he may be threatening.
Well, he gave us all a little clue as to how he would govern in an interview this week.
I am a Bible-believing Christian. Someone asked me today in the media, they said, it's curious. People are curious. What does Mike Johnson think about any issue under the sun? I said, well, go pick up a Bible off your shelf and read it. That's my worldview.
You heard that right. The Bible doesn't just inform his worldview, it is his worldview. In fact, during his first speech in his new job, Johnson suggested that his election as speaker was an act of God.
He didn't actually say that.
He never said that's a lie.
He said we all have been ordained by God to be lifted up to where we are today. That's what he said. But no, it was an act of God.
Talk about a bit of a humble brag there. So what exactly has God apparently
hit by lightning?
What did you? She's going to be hit by lightning.
No, she's dead.
So what exactly has God apparently called on Mike Johnson to do?
Oh, now we got to continue the theme. So what is God telling Mike Johnson to do? This is the level of MSNBC now.
Well, his views on policy are essentially what you'd expect from a religious fundamentalist. They're more divisive than they are divine.
Oh, yes.
Prior to his election to Congress in 2016, Johnson spent nearly two decades working for the hard right conservative legal activist group, the Alliance Defending Freedom. It's a group, by the way, that is so right wing, it was designated a hate group by the Southern Poverty Law Center.
Oh, there you go. That's proof this guy is horrible. Man, I wish we would be deemed a hate group by the Southern Poverty Law Center. It might get us, you know, a little
attention. No, it won't help us at all. I mean, don't, don't wish for such things.
But don't they deem everybody a hate group, basically? The Southern Poverty Law Center. Everybody.
I think they deemed the libs of TikTok one. I'm not sure. But they have a lot of, they're so off the rails. I wouldn't wish any attention by the, they're creepy. They're creeps.
I'm just using it as a example.
The ADF has worked for decades to blur the line between church and state.
This is the issue. Now, see, this is the same thing that Swisher and Professor G were all about. Oh, church and state, it should be separate.
Not erase it altogether. It's kind of their goal. They've pushed to expand LGBT.
What?
It's not the goal.
No, but this is why she's so good. She's very good at what she's doing here.
Church and state.
Yeah, she's a horrible propagandist. A glib one, and she's not an ugly woman, but she's not attractive in the way that she should be for television, and I think she's got ratings in the toilet because she doesn't have any, there's no real charisma that would draw in an audience.
Also, what I'm hearing is this is Rachel Maddow's writers. But she isn't. She's trying. You know what I mean? She's trying to do.
Rachel Maddow had. Yes. Well, Rachel Maddow's writers came from Oberman, who was her mentor. But she's a comedian. She's actually a genuine comedian. So she could deliver lines with a kind of sarcasm.
Yes.
That was a goofy style of sarcasm that had an attraction to a lot of people who like to nod their heads when Rachel talked. Yeah. This woman has no sense of humor that I can tell.
No, but it's the same. It must be the same writing team or influence, but she can't deliver the lines.
That's what I mean. She can't because she's not funny.
Correct.
Not erase it altogether. It's kind of their goal. They've pushed to expand LGBTQ+ discrimination in the name of religious freedom.
So they disagree with LGBTQ, so they are pushing for everything against LGBTQ freedom.
And they were a big part of the effort to overturn Roe v. Wade. Following the Supreme Court...
Overturn Roe v. Wade. The Supreme Court did that.
...for its 2003 ruling that struck down the country's sodomy laws as unconstitutional, Johnson criticized the decision and wrote in favor of criminalizing gay sex. He claimed that, quote, states have always maintained the right to discourage the evils of sexual conduct outside of marriage.
That's not quite the same as criminalizing, but okay.
Then in 2000...
This is one of those examples where you say one thing and then you use an example that isn't the same. It's wrong. And this is the lowest form of journalism.
And it's about the state's sodomy laws. And he says something completely different, according to her quote.
Three ruling that struck down the country's sodomy laws as unconstitutional. Johnson criticized the decision and wrote in favor of criminalizing gay sex. He claimed that, quote, states have always maintained the right to discourage the evils of sexual conduct outside of marriage.
That doesn't mean gay sex necessarily. outside of marriage, any sex. Oh, not that I'm on board with what he's saying, but I mean, come on. Come on, Psaki.
Then in 2004, Johnson wrote that homosexual relationships are inherently unnatural, ultimately harmful, and a dangerous lifestyle. You don't exactly have to be a religious scholar to know whether discrimination is a key tenet of the Bible. It's not. And then there is his policy on God.
Whoa. She never read the Bible.
That was my favorite line.
The homosexual relationships are inherently unnatural, ultimately harmful, and a dangerous lifestyle.
Say it again.
You don't exactly have to be a religious scholar to know whether discrimination is a key tenet of the Bible. It's not. And then there is his policy on gun violence. Speaker Johnson wants to talk about anything but guns. In 2016, he actually blamed school shootings on no-fault divorce laws, radical feminism, and legal abortion.
I've got to find where he said that. I love that part. Maybe SSRIs?
Quite a stretch there. Then there's the obvious question of how Johnson's convictions square with his fierce loyalty to Donald Trump.
Ah. If you stop a second. Since you brought this Rachel thing in, I'm now listening to her and trying to hear Rachel.
Mm-hmm.
And I can see where this material would work with Rachel.
Totally. She can do it. She has that snide kind of delivery.
It's a snide, a certain kind. It's a beyond, you know, Psaki likes to think she's snide. But compared to Rachel Maddow, no, she's not even close. Rachel Maddow has snide to an extreme. And she could pull this off and make it and get people nodding their heads. Psaki's not pulling it off. It's just like blah, 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 blah. It's too monotone.
I wish that we had AI that could change this from Psaki into Rachel Maddow.
I mean, it's doable, but we're not going to do it because it's time consuming and stupid. But you just do it in your own head.
All right, we got 30 seconds left.
A guy who has been married multiple times, paid hush money to a porn star.
Oh, wait. All right. How can he even think about Donald Trump because he's a heathen?
In 2016, he actually blamed school shootings on no-fault divorce laws, radical feminism, and legal abortion. It's all quite a stretch there. Then there's the obvious question of how Johnson's convictions square with his fierce loyalty to Donald Trump, a guy who has been married multiple times, paid hush money to a porn star, and joked about grabbing women.
Yeah, no, you can't like him as a church, a God-fearing man. That's no good. There's no repentance. There's no forgiveness.
I would love to know what passage in the Bible told Johnson to become one of the most important architects behind Trump's effort to overturn the 2020 election. Which passage? Was it God whispering in his ear to ignore the Constitution and disenfranchise millions of voters? It's hard not to think that Mike Johnson's idea of what America should be is drastically out of line with what America actually is. He clearly envisions a country that's less democratic and less tolerant. And then they explain why he seems more comfortable with the America of the 18th century than the America of today.
Are there no democratic Christians?
No, all Christians are atheist sinners. They're all atheists, the whole Democrat Party.
No, I can't believe that.
Or Satanists. They could be Satanists.
I don't know.
There's a difference between an atheist and a Satanist.
That doesn't sound right.
Yeah, it sounds right to me.
My goodness.
You're right. This is written by poor Rachel's writers.
Yeah.
They had this down to a T. They were writing for her voice.
Yep. Yeah.
And which is not easy, by the way. When you get a if you're reading from a prompter and somebody's writing for your voice, it's the greatest experience of your life.
Yeah.
And you just read and read and you sound like you're talking.
Yep.
And Rachel had their best. And so these guys, she kind of quits. She does once a month show or something now. And so what are we going to do? Well, Jen Psaki's got a new show. Let's write for her. And it's like, oh, geez. She's not delivering our material correctly.
She can't do it right. And they've done is they put clown mascara on her. Like, you know, you have to take a look at one of her recent shows.
I haven't seen it for a few months.
You know, they have they clump it together.
Well, they wanted to put a big red nose on her then.
Now that I would watch. Hey, our boys, our Russian boys, Vovon and Lexus, struck again.
Oh, those guys are the best.
I love these guys. Vovon and Lexus. It's amazing how, I mean, now all of this, you know, as I'm watching this, or it's actually, you know, I'm listening to it, I'm thinking, this could all be a deep fake. I have no idea what Georgia Maloney sounds like at length speaking in English. She's the prime minister.
Well, there would be a denial if that was true.
There is no denial that I'm aware of yet.
If there's no denial, then it's not a deep fake. I mean, denials, you have to, maybe that's one thing that should be been discussed in Bletchley, which is that people have to be quicker on the draw
to deny,
when it comes to denying things.
Yes, yes, yes. So they dupe her by posing as an African politician. It's unclear as of now, which country in Africa. And it's very interesting because after a while, it's Vovon and Alexis who are speaking. They sound pretty much like a Russian African president. They just keep going. But, you know, it's a phone call or it's a Zoom call. Or I don't know. I pulled two clips from it. It's about 13 minutes in total. And the first is about the illegal immigration that's going on. And that's just a couple of things that were interesting that popped up in this first bit.
Speaking. Hi, dear Prime Minister. Nice to hear you. Nice to meet you. So thank you for your time. And
how are you?
I'm good. I'm good now. I heard many bad news. So what is the situation?
Yes, yes. The situation is a bit difficult. Anyway, the situation is very difficult for us to manage in this time. We've had from the beginning of the year, in nine months, more than 120,000 people.
Oh, wow.
Who came mostly from Tunisia.
This is interesting. So this is not really reported as such, so, and it's not that much compared to the United States, but 120,000 mainly from Tunisia who have come into Italy.
So situation which is very difficult on every side, yeah. On the humanitarian side, the logistics side, the security side.
Yeah.
So I'm having and what I see is that these flows risk to be increased for the situation that's going on in Africa,
yeah.
Moreover in the Sahel, but also with the problem of the grain and all the problems that you know quite better than me. We are working also with the European Union for a memorandum with Tunisia to help not only managing migration. I mean, my idea is always that you have to do both the things from one side.
And I agree, absolutely.
So there's something up with Tunisia that's not really being reported on. And she says, you know better than I do about the grain. Okay, so are people starving? It's always like Arab Spring kicked off in Tunisia, so got to keep our eyes on Tunisia. Now comes, I think, the best part of this hoax, which I just love that these politicians, that they fall for this. It's amazing.
Makes you wonder what else they fall for.
Oh, all kinds of stuff.
Climate change?
Oh, well, here she basically says the quiet part out loud about Ukraine.
How do you estimate the conflict in Europe between Ukraine and Russia? How long it will take?
Does he not sound like a Russian at this point? How long?
He sounds like a Russian from the get-go.
How do you estimate the conflict in Europe between Ukraine and Russia? How long it will take to understand that is what is the position? You had conversations with President Biden and others, so.
Well, I see that there is a lot of fatigue, if I have to say the truth, from all the sides. We near the moment in which everybody understands that we need a way out.
Yeah.
The problem is to find a way out which can be acceptable for both without destroying the international law. I've got some ideas about it on how to manage this situation, but I'm waiting to understand to the right moment to try to put on the table these ideas I've got.
So there's a little more to this. So she says everybody is sick and tired of this crap is basically what she's saying. We're tired. We need a way out. We need to stop this. This is not working for anybody. And then she says, well, I have some ideas. I don't believe she has ideas. But then it gets really weird after this next bit.
But you see that Ukraine is not successful
to do these things.
But you see that Ukraine is not successful. Ukraine is not so successful as we expected, as we all expected for this spring.
The counteroffensive of Ukraine is maybe not going as they were expecting.
Yeah.
It is going, but it didn't change. I mean,
Now listen to this next bit. This is really weird.
The destiny of the conflict.
Yeah.
So everybody understands that it really could last many years if we don't try to find some solutions. The problem is, which is the solution acceptable for both without opening other conflicts? You know what I think about Libya. No, maybe you don't know, but we could discuss it for hours, my friend. What it happened to Libya? For maybe today somebody understands that the situation after was not so good.
What is this with Libya? Do they plan on killing Zelensky and turning it into Libya?
Well, for one thing, her commentary about Libya, we have to remember that Libya used to be an Italian state.
Yeah, so it's
historically.
Right.
And so what happened in Libya, she's not happy about, because it was NATO at our behest, at Hillary's behest.
Yes.
To destroy them. And of course, we on our show, we alluded to the fact that it was Gaddafi who was trying to undercut the American dollar.
Right, with the gold dinar. Yes.
Gold dinar. And so you don't do that. But so she, I don't know what she's referring to about Libya, but it's possible that she's making an illusion that Ukraine's just going to become a mess like Libya, which I don't see that happening because Russia would just take it over.
Well, there's a Time magazine had a big piece on Zelensky, and Time magazine
got played up everywhere.
Yeah, but the part that did it get played up about the corruption? Because that was in the article, but I didn't hear that also, much about
was it.
Was it
Newsweek or Time that had the piece where they had his assistants, associates saying he's out of control, he's lost it?
Yes. It was his, let me see, Andriy Yermak, presidential chief of staff, referring to the bunker that Zelensky and a few of his confidants have called home. We're not out there living the high life, he says. All day we're busy fighting this war. Amid all pressure to root out corruption, I assume, this is the journalist, perhaps naively, that officials in Ukraine would think twice before taking a bribe or pocketing state funds. But when I made this point to a top presidential advisor in early October, he asked me to turn off my audio recorder so he could speak more freely. Quote, Simon, you're mistaken, he says. People are stealing like there's no tomorrow. And then they go on to say that Zelensky is delusional, is the word, the term they used.
Yeah.
Delusional. Time magazine, isn't that owned by Reid Hoffman? No, not Reid Hoffman.
That's Newsweek you're thinking of.
No, who owns? I thought Time magazine was also
owned by
Well,
let's so. Take a, you know, it's not the Sorry. Should be Time Warner.
Mark Benioff. Mark Benioff. Yeah, he owns it.
When did he buy it?
In 2019, at the end of 2019. Then he's the Salesforce guy, huge Democrat.
So yeah, he's a big Democrat. So he's a huge Democrat, but he's not a progressive. I say that because he's buddies with Schwarzenegger.
okay. Yeah, but I don't know, man. This is that's weird. That's M5M should not be letting that news out. That's not on board with
maybe
the messaging.
Maybe that was the idea.
Well, hence...
I think it was meant to go out.
Hence the Libyan solution. Yeah. But I fear for our coke-snorting friend. Things don't look good for him.
Well, we've said that before.
Yeah,
on this show,
and we've been quite
at least
wrong.
A year ago. We've been quite wrong.
Not
necessarily wrong. Sometimes these things take time
to kill somebody.
Time Magazine.
So I have a series of clips, and I'm very confused, not about the clips, but about the response from the White House. And everyone has seen this happening. This is, you know, the main M5M news of the day.
This morning, growing concerns over the rise of anti-Semitic incidents on college campuses across the country. The latest at Cornell University, police are guarding the Center for Jewish Living, and the president of the school has notified the FBI of a possible hate crime after she says a, quote, series of horrendous anti-Semitic messages threatening violence were posted online.
So that's NBC in the morning. Here's NBC in the evening.
Tonight, the U.S. is condemning this pro-Palestinian mob that stormed an airport in Russia looking for Jews. Hundreds of men, some carrying banners with anti-Semitic slogans, rushed onto the tarmac, searching for Israeli passengers. Around the world, demonstrations calling for a ceasefire in the Israel-Hamas war.
And then we've got CNN.
A 21-year-old student has been arrested for making anti-Semitic online threats against the Jewish community at Cornell University. He did not enter a plea during his first appearance in federal court today. This is happening as the number of anti-Semitic threats is clearly on the rise across the United States since the Hamas attacks against Israel.
And then we have CBS.
New York State Police are now standing guard outside the Cornell Center for Jewish Living after authorities say Patrick Dye, a junior engineering student at Cornell, threatened to kill Jewish students, including those who eat at this kosher dining hall.
So what does our administration do? And this was a very long clip from our vice president. I made an edit, which I've made clear with a sound effect. But this is the intro and the payoff of her announcement.
Our nation was founded on the fundamental principle that all people should have the freedom to live, to worship, and to be without fear of violence or persecution.
No, actually, it's the pursuit of life, liberty, and happiness. It's not exactly what you said, but okay. We'll let you slide. It's your interpretation.
Every person has the right to live safe from violence, hate, and bigotry.
No.
And for those reasons and so many more, President Joe Biden and I have a duty, not only to keep the people of our nation safe, but to condemn unequivocally and forcefully all forms of hate. And today, we take another important step forward in our fight against hate. For years, Muslims in America and those perceived to be Muslim have endured a disproportionate number of hate-fueled attacks. As a result of the Hamas terrorist attack in Israel and the humanitarian crisis in Gaza, we have seen an uptick in anti-Palestinian, anti-Arab, anti-Semitic, and Islamophobic incidents across America, including the brutal attack of a Palestinian-American woman who is Muslim and the killing of her 6-year-old son.
So everyone is talking about the Jew hate, and they put out a statement about Islamophobia. What?
Well, on the cover sheet, it says Islamophobia and anti-Semitism, you're right.
Well, listen,
the announcement was about...
Yeah, well, listen to the last 45 seconds.
A senseless act of violence that the Department of Justice is investigating as a hate crime. For so many people in our nation, the past few days and weeks have brought about all too familiar fears. Fears that they will be targeted, profiled, or attacked simply because of who they are, how they worship, or how they look. And so today, I am proud to announce the Biden-Harris administration will develop our nation's first national strategy to counter Islamophobia. This strategy will be a comprehensive and detailed plan to protect Muslims and those perceived to be Muslim from hate, bigotry, and violence.
So this can only be that the second part of the binary movement, which is, you know, getting young people in universities to be all pro-Palestine, free Palestine, as we know, organized by Act Blue, by the Democrat Party and their handlers, This is the payoff. We're with you. We are with you. The problem is clearly Islamophobia. When obviously that's not the segment of Americans who are afraid. It's very twisted.
It's totally twisted. I'm in agreement. I've seen the same exact structure that you spotted here. It doesn't make a lot of sense unless the Democrat Party has decided to give up on the Democrat Jews. Most Jews in the United States are Democrats. There's very few of them that aren't.
Yeah.
It's the number I think is under 20% that are maybe Republicans. And I think that they're giving up on the Jewish vote.
Wow.
Troublesome group.
They're
all in with the trans Maoists and the rest of them that hate the Jews.
Yeah.
And they bailed. I mean, the Democrat, I don't understand the thinking behind Jews voting for Democrats or blacks voting for Democrats. It has never made any sense to me if you just look at the track record.
NBC today took it one step further, I guess, trying to give it a little bit of a Donald Trump slant to it.
As Israel's war against Hamas rages on, a dire warning from FBI Director Christopher Wray.
The ongoing war in the Middle East has raised the threat of an attack against Americans in the United States to a whole nother level.
Wray telling the Senate Homeland Security Committee the FBI is concerned violent extremists will be inspired by Hamas and other foreign terrorist groups to attack Americans.
We assess that the actions of Hamas and its allies will serve as an inspiration, the likes of which we haven't seen since ISIS launched its so-called caliphate several years ago.
It comes as this morning the FBI says it now has a suspect in custody in connection with violent online threats targeting Jewish students at Cornell University. According to prosecutors, 21-year-old Patrick Dye, a junior at the Ivy League school, is facing federal charges for a series of posts allegedly threatening to kill Jewish people at the college and shoot up a campus building. The Anti-Defamation League says it's seen a nearly 400% increase in reported anti-Semitic incidents compared to the same period last year, with college students frequently targeted.
When we are hearing from students who are saying that they are being harassed, concerned about being visibly Jewish, I think is really concerning.
On Tuesday, FBI Director Wray highlighted the alarming surge in anti-Semitic hate nationwide.
This is a threat that is reaching in some ways sort of historic levels.
All part of his warning that threats against both American Jews and Muslims are growing, inflamed since the war began, including the killing of a 6-year-old Palestinian American child in Illinois, allegedly at the hands of his family's landlord. Wray said the FBI also arrested a man in Houston who was studying how to build bombs and posted online about his support for killing Jews.
I think this is all anti-Trump rhetoric and subtle propaganda.
Well, I have a couple of thoughts on this.
Okay.
First of all, do you recall about a year or two ago when there's all this news and, oh, anti-Asian Pacific, anti-Asian hate?
Yeah.
And they were promoting it in the media. That is, and you'd get one or two incidents here and there. There's usually some dumb shit that beat up some old Chinese woman in San Francisco or something like that.
Yeah.
But they were promoting as this was a major trend. And it's like they're trying to make this happen. That guy who was the 21-year-old who was on social media posting all these threats and all the rest of it, that has to be a hoax. There's no normal person that's going to do that, because they know what the results are going to be. You're going to get arrested.
Yeah.
You can't do that. Nobody does that anymore. That's old school. That's before people realize you can't do that. This is bull crap. That story is nonsense. And then they keep bringing up the only instance they seem to be able to find about the anti-Muslims, that little kid who was killed by a maniac. If you see a picture of the so-called landlord, this is all ginned up.
Yeah.
Everything about it is ginned up for some purpose. You might be right. It might have something to do with Trump.
People, turn off your televisions. Leave your phone in the desk drawer. Be like JCD. You'll be much happier for it.
I'm going the whole year.
And I love
what I told this to somebody the other day. They always get the same response. Oh, really? Well, then how come I can text you? I said, because I use Google Voice.
Google Voice, yeah.
It's on the computer, and I get the text on the computer. Oh, Why am I talking to you on now? Landline?
I love Horowitz. What if you have an emergency? And you're like, I'm not a doctor. My patients don't need me immediately. What if you're stranded by the side of the road? What do you do? And you said, I just wait until someone comes by to help me out.
Yeah, that's what you do.
You live in such a beautiful world. Everybody, I wish everyone could live in your world.
It's reality.
Yes, yes, I know. Here's what the Israeli envoy did in the at the United Nations Security Council.
As Israel was increasingly criticized by UN Security Council members for its massive bombardment of Gaza, in the middle of the emergency meeting, the Israeli ambassador pinned a yellow star to his jacket.
Some of you have forgotten why this body was established. Just like my grandparents and the grandparents of millions of Jews, from now on, my team and I will wear yellow stars. We will wear this star until you condemn the atrocities of Hamas and demand the immediate release of our hostages.
The gesture was swiftly criticized by Israel's Holocaust Memorial, which urged the ambassador to wear the Israeli flag instead, saying the act disgraced Holocaust victims. An episode that illustrates the sensitive debates and deep divisions within the UN Security Council.
You know, it really sucks when the Jewish Holocaust Museum said, take that star off. That's not right.
Four draft resolutions have already been rejected since the war began 3 weeks ago. One blocked by Russia and China because it did not clearly call for a ceasefire. Others stopped by the U.S. because they failed to mention Israel's right to defend itself.
Oh, yeah, so the U.N. is just useless. Useless. But Netanyahu, man, he threw out, like, he did this speech.
He really looks bad, by the way.
Oh, yeah, he's not long for this gig, that's for sure. And he did a whole bunch of things. I'm like, what are you talking about? He threw out a 33. He threw out an axis of evil. And well, this is just a short bit from his televised speech, which is in English. So I presume it's meant for the international community.
Hamas is also preventing foreign nationals from leaving Gaza altogether. And most despicably, Hamas is holding over 200 Israeli hostages, including 33 children, holding them, terrorizing them, keeping them as hostages. Every civilized nation should stand with Israel in demanding that these hostages be freed immediately and freed unconditionally. I want to make clear Israel's position regarding a ceasefire. Just as the United States would not agree to a ceasefire after the bombing of Pearl Harbor or after the terrorist attack of 9/11, Israel will not agree to a cessation of hostilities with Hamas after the horrific attacks of October 7th.
Notice how October 7th is supposed to be the new date. You know, we have 9/11. We have, well, January 6th was worse than any of this. But okay, we'll let Netanyahu have it. October 7th, this is the date. Remember October 7th. Never again.
Calls for a ceasefire are calls for Israel to surrender to Hamas. To surrender to terrorism.
He's not surrendering. There's not going to be a ceasefire. That's clear.
To surrender to barbarism.
Barbarism.
That will not happen. Ladies and gentlemen, the Bible says that there is a time for peace and a time for war.
I love this because this is Ecclesiastes 3. And the actual Bible quote is there's a time for war and a time for peace. But he kind of twists that around, which I think is interesting.
This is a time for war. A war for our common future. Today we draw a line between the forces of civilization and the forces of barbarism. It is a time for everyone to decide where they stand.
By the way, I don't think if we were to advise him, I don't think we would say it's a war against civilization and barbarism. I mean, it just doesn't sound right. Terrorism is a good word. You know, barbarism.
Yeah, barbarism is a pretty archaic term.
Yeah, it's not a good, it's not good marketing.
It doesn't sound good. No. You could do better than this.
Israel will stand against the forces of barbarism until victory. I hope and pray that civilized nations everywhere will back this fight. Because Israel's fight is your fight. Because if Hamas and Iran's axis of evil win, you will be their next target.
There you go. The Hamas...
Well, yeah, I have to say this. There's an image, some of the images from coming out of Gaza, talk about rubbleizing.
Oh, yeah.
And they're doing a hell of a job. Now, I have a bunch of clips from the head of Hamas, which you'll never hear on any American broadcast, that I thought would be an interesting contrast, so we could at least be somewhat.
Get another. By the way, do you want the official Arabic pronunciation guide as we requested?
Oh, yeah. Somebody wrote us saying you're pronouncing Hamas wrong, and you're not, it's not hummus, and Hezbollah. You don't know what you're doing. So, yes, I would like to hear this.
Now this is controversial, of course, because this is the Arabic way of pronouncing Hamas and Hezbollah, not the Israeli way. All right, so there's a difference. So this is the Arabic pronunciation of what I was saying, Hamas. No.
Hamas.
Now, the important one is Hezbollah, or is it Hezbollah? What is it? This will be as important as Kyiv or Kiev. This will be how you identify yourself.
Hezbollah.
Okay.
We're going to keep on our merry way with hummus and Hezbollah. I'm not going to pronounce it that way.
I am. I'm going to Hezbollah.
Yeah, I think you should. So this was, I believe, on Al Jazeera or someplace, and it was the Hamas leader.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought it was interesting because there's an analysis in the third clip that's unique.
Hamas's political leader has given a televised address. In it, Ismail Haniyeh accused Israel's prime minister of
Is his name Ishmael? Literally?
Is it?
Sounds like it.
I started over and then listened to the way now this is Al Jazeera, so they're going to pronounce it the Arabic way.
Yes.
And I didn't, it's different.
In it, Ismail Haniyeh accused Israel's prime minister of destroying the entire region to save himself and his family from prison.
Yeah.
He said Hamas had offered Benjamin Netanyahu's government a prisoner swap deal as a start of a way out of the conflict. And he called on countries, especially the United States, to stop supplying weapons to Israel.
All right.
So this has to do with Netanyahu getting arrested?
Yeah,
Hamas end up, doing this attack to begin with to help him? I mean, this. Okay, well, let's just listen to this guy.
Why Netanyahu?
One of the major reasons for this war was Netanyahu, who's leading a far-right, racist, and fascist group, and is thinking of saving himself and his family from prison, even at the expense of destroying the entire region. Before the war, we met with all the parties about the continued rule of Netanyahu and his fascist government, about their reckless behavior.
Wow, so these guys are in line with the protesters who were protesting Netanyahu?
You're talking about the protesters in Israel?
Yes! He said we met with all the groups.
Well, you know, this is the weird thing about it. Is the Queers for Palestine.
Let's keep going.
If you look into the that judicial thing and you really start digging into it, it goes back to one of the justices who became the head of it back in the 90s, who is a super progressive that started implementing all kinds of, I would have to use the word, I don't like it. Woke policies in Israel,
right?
And started introducing. In fact, there was a picture in the Israeli Jerusalem News saying that Tel Aviv is the world's biggest gay city.
Yes,
there's something up with trans Maoism, the Israeli judicial system, and Palestine, and none of it makes any real sense. But it's interesting to kind of let these guys talk and maybe we'll figure it out.
I think it makes perfect sense. What I'm hearing him say, and we'll listen again, he said, I met with all the groups who hated Netanyahu because he's a dictator, which is all predicate and all based on these protests, including the factions of the IDF. We had the clips, even the lesbian helicopter pilot. We said, oh, no, we're just not going to serve this guy anymore. We're not going to participate. And now this Ismail guy is saying, well, we had meetings with them, and this Netanyahu is a bad guy. He's got to go because, queers for Palestine, I guess.
Before the war, we met with all the parties about the continued rule of Netanyahu and his fascist government, about their reckless behavior. They're desecrating Christian and Muslim holy sites, continuing with illegal and unlawful settlements, unleashing settlers to kill and harass our people. We have warned repeatedly that this will not go unpunished. It will explode at any time to curb this criminal and his gang. Unfortunately, these warnings fell on deaf ears as our allies continued to back him with his racist, fascist policies.
Well, what happened to death to Jews? That's what this guy's supposed to be saying. No, it's all death to Netanyahu. This is very interesting.
Here we are once again. Netanyahu has no problem to turn the entire region into scorched land simply to save himself and those around him. The movement has provided a comprehensive perspective, starting by ending the aggression, opening the border, the prisoner swap deal, and ending with the revival of the political and diplomatic movement towards the establishment of an independent state with Jerusalem as its capital with the right of self-determination. However, Netanyahu and his gang are misleading his own people and providing false promises which cannot and will not be achieved.
Wow, this is very interesting. I mean, who knows what the truth is, of course, but this is the message.
Everyone's lying.
Everybody's full of it, yeah.
But at least you get their side of it.
So he's saying that because Netanyahu himself is stopping the peaceful ideas that are on the table, which is... am I hearing two-state solution with Jerusalem as an independent state?
What he kind of said.
Yeah. Okay.
Jerusalem being the capital of the new Palestine is a non-starter, no matter what.
That's not going
to
happen.
They like to think. Although it's kind of a divided city as it is. All right. Now we get to part three, which has an analysis in here I thought was interesting.
We remind the countries and states supporting the Zionist regime, legitimizing the pogrom perpetrated by them against our people, chiefly the United States of America. We remind them that they must back down on these obsolete imperialistic policies and refrain from providing military aid to this fascist regime. We call on them to stop preventing the international will aiming at ending the hostilities and opening the border crossing. This is what we witnessed in the UN General Assembly. To them, we say you are standing on the wrong side of history and the present. The region and beyond cannot enjoy peace and stability as long as our established rights of the Palestinians are not restored. The rights of freedom, independence, and the return of refugees.
Well, joining us from Washington, D.C. now is Benjamin Friedman. He's the policy director at Defense Priorities, a U.S. foreign policy think tank. What do you think is Hamas's strategy here, even as we continue to see Israel's relentless bombardment?
Well, it seems like Hamas is now eager to get public opinion globally on their side and push Israel to negotiate some kind of settlement. I don't think Hamas imagines that they'll get a real movement towards, a Palestinian state and with Jerusalem as its capital anytime in the near future. But by sounding reasonable, more like the PLO, or a non-annihilationist Palestinian movement, I guess they think they can win more public support and maybe increase pressure on Israel to stop the war and negotiate.
Okay, so that seems to be working because of all the protests we see in this country with all these kids. And like I said in the newsletter, there's a picture in there. Who's producing all these Palestinian flags?
Yeah.
That's a moneymaker.
The same people who did the Ukraine flags. Hello.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, whoever those people, that flag company should, this should go public. So let's just end of this.
In your view, does Israel actually have an end game here? Or is this largely about vengeance?
It seems like vengeance is playing a large role. If it's not all that's going on, it's hard to figure out what the Israeli end game is, or, you know, how this war serves a political end. They say they want to annihilate Hamas. That's easy to understand, given what happened on the 7th. But it's I think, not going to be possible to have anyone run Gaza as long as there's Palestinians there, other than Hamas or something that looks like it. Hamas 2.0, maybe a more radical ISIS-like
Hamas 2.0
version. So, and I don't think the Israelis want to be in charge of Gaza, running it as a police state. So it's difficult for me to figure out where they think this is all headed, other than maybe just going day by day and killing as many Hamas fighters as they can, and figuring the politics will be worked out eventually.
How concerned do you think is America not to get drawn into a wider regional conflict, and yet there's still no call from Joe Biden for a ceasefire?
Well, the president hasn't called for a ceasefire beyond this humanitarian pause thing that the administration has been repeating, and I don't think they will. I don't think they feel whatever there is in their deepest hearts. I don't think they feel politically able to separate themselves that much from Israel. So I think avoiding escalation should be the U.S. main goal, most realistic goal politically, in avoiding getting drawn into war with Iran. And one way I think we do that is by limiting the damage Iranian proxy forces or linked militias in Iraq and Syria can do, which means, I think, getting our forces out of Iraq and particularly Syria, which I think we should have left years ago in any case.
Okay, so there's so many people benefit. First of all, war is great for business. Great. War is a racket, Smedley Butler.
Yeah, and it is great for business. We talked about this on the Horowitz show. Wartime economies are always winners, but after the war, it's a nightmare.
Yeah, like after Vietnam.
Yeah, the 70s were a nightmare.
So on one hand, we have the political part, which is, hey, man, we should call for a pause. Come on, Israel, you should pause, not ceasefire, but we call it a pause. This, and then we have the White House and the Democrat Party in America are all pro-Palestine. Let's just call it anti-Islamophobic. And then we have the Republican side, which is the crazy Christian, Mike Johnson. Oh, he's going to give more money and more weapons to the Jews. So you can see how these lines are being divided. I mean, it's so obvious. Yeah. And the true winner, of course, is the military industrial complex. And they are all over this thing. Like, yeah, let's get into Iran. Yeah. Come on, ABC, do some stories.
The U.S. launched retaliatory strikes this week in Syria against Iranian proxies.
Proxies.
There was an attack the next day on American troops. There have been about 20 so far. Is Iran really getting the message? And if they don't, what happens?
Well, the president has been very straightforward on this. If American troops are attacked by Iran and its proxies, we will respond. We did respond. If attacks continue, we will respond. And I think the Iranians understand our message. And we, of course, are taking every measure necessary to protect our forces, to increase our vigilance, and to work with other countries in the region to try to keep this conflict that is currently in Israel and Gaza from spinning out into a regional conflict. But the risk is real, and therefore our vigilance is high, and the steps that we are taking to deter that and prevent that are serious, systematic, and ongoing.
The steps we're taking to get into the war, we just need to drop one word, proxies. If we can just say Iran instead of Iranian proxies.
Where's the evidence of this?
Zero. There's no evidence.
How about this? This has Gulf of Tompkins written all over it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no, they attacked us again. Well, let's show some pictures.
So I got a note from a father or uncle of one of the servicemen who is indeed at a Ford operating base in Syria. I mean, this is all true. We have bases there. I mean, it's not like a huge base like Iraq, the Green Zone, but of course we got bases there. We need to spend more money on military. And here is the Deutsche Welle.
We weren't, by the way, it should be mentioned, we were never allowed to have a base there by the country itself, by the sovereign nation.
No, no.
It's not like our bases in Germany where, you know, they like us there because we spend money.
Yeah.
We're not doing anything for the Syrian economy, I can assure you.
Here's Deutsche Welle asking what an escalation in the region could mean.
Before Russia's invasion of Ukraine, there was relatively little public awareness of how much the world relied on Ukraine for the supply of grain, or how much Europe depended on Russia for its energy supply. Now, as the devastating conflict continues to unfold in the Middle East, some are beginning to wonder what the bigger economic ramifications might be.
What do you think? What do you think the bigger economic ramifications might be? Could it be dead people? Our babies die worse than your babies? We kill your babies better? Is that what's important? Nah.
Especially when it comes to the global supply of oil, which could be affected if Iran were to become more embroiled in the conflict. The region is also a key shipping route, with disruption to key waterways like the Suez Canal and the Strait of Hormuz potentially causing delays in deliveries. And earlier, I spoke to Carsten Jetsky, chief economist at ING. I asked him what a possible escalation involving Iran could mean for the global supply of oil.
Indeed, I think this is where this conflict will have bigger repercussions for the rest of the world. So just looking at trade is very naive, but oil is an extremely important one. We saw already when the terroristic attacks on Israel started that oil prices started to surge. If Iran, one way or the other, was to be involved in this conflict, Iran being an important producer of oil, if the entire Middle East would somehow, or one way or the other, be involved in this conflict, with, as a result, maybe even sanctions coming from the U.S. on Iran, on other countries, this would then clearly have a big impact on oil producing countries. Therefore, we would see oil prices going up. If this conflict was to escalate, we could really see oil prices going above $100 per barrel very easily.
Oh, at least we know it's important. If the conflict escalates, oil will get more expensive. It's all so cynical.
Cynical.
And meanwhile, America, please, whatever you do, keep watching this Middle East region. Pay no attention to the Venezuelans freezing to the sidewalks in Chicago.
Well, Mike and Ray, migrant families deeply concerned about the harsh elements, not knowing how much longer it'll be before they get moved to shelters. And as you might imagine, parents especially worried about their kids. Parents say exposure to the cold is making their kids sick. We don't know what to do, this Venezuelan mother of three confesses, with the inevitable arrival of snow and bitter cold. We feel that one way or another, she says, we're trapped. For now, at least, no CTA warming buses in the afternoon outside the snow-capped tent village housing homeless immigrants at Chicago's 19th Police District. It's not just, the father tells us, that police officers are denying an indoor space for my son, he alleges. We reached out to police to get their assessment on sleeping arrangements at the 19th District, News Affairs referring us to the mayor's office. You may be wondering if Illinois' Child Welfare Agency has concerns about kids spending their days and nights in the cold. A DCFS spokesperson says that the agency hasn't received any complaints, but didn't respond to a follow-up question about whether it would investigate or intervene on migrants' behalf. And the mayor's press office in an evening news release reporting that warming buses are being provided by the Chicago Transit Authority, and they are being positioned at 16 police districts from 8 p.m. until 8 a.m.
You know, it's 24 degrees and snowing in Chicago. Here's our problems. Leave everything else for what it is for a moment, because that's all political. And then these migrants,
I didn't have warming buses.
Yeah, yeah. And you get to go on board the bus and warm up.
That's pathetic.
So here's proof that the pictures you see of the southern border are just theater. I mean, it's real, of course. Haiti shuts flights to sneak migrants to USA. Haiti's sick of it. People are going to Haiti, getting on a plane, flying into America, where they get paperwork right there in Haiti. El Salvador says, you know, if you're coming from Africa and you want to go to America through El Salvador, we're going to charge you $1,000 now. You land here, $1,000 plus tax. Then you can stay at our airport before it's time for you to fly on. They're being flown in. Turks and Caicos. 15 daily flights. We're being hoodwinked. Amy Pope is brilliant. She keeps us focused on the migrants coming across the Rio Grande. Mark Hall just told me, Sir Mark Hall, he says, Ecuador, Panama, all these countries, they're people, that's where they get their debit cards. They're lining up there. It's,
hey, it's a business.
It's a business. Yeah, as long as we can just be honest about it and just say this is what's going on. We're being duped by our media, whatever it can be called, media. Give me a break.
No, they do what they're told.
Yes, like stories like this.
Speaking of Florida, the governor and presidential candidate Ron DeSantis is making news for his footwear.
So according to Politico, three people described as expert shoemakers say DeSantis appears to be wearing height boosters inside his cowboy boots to make himself appear taller.
Some observers have commented about his strangely shaped cowboy boots, but the governor, who says he's 5'11", denies using lifts, saying his boots are standard off the rack.
Yeah, this is the headline.
No, this story was everywhere.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
And he had him on some talk show. He was sitting there and they asked him his height.
Bill Maher. Yeah. No, I know.
I think it was I saw it as something else.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But he's probably a 5'10 guy. He's like, feels bad about the fact that Trump's like what, 6'2, 6'3? Yes. Trump's a big, tall dude. Fat, and then he's a little guy. He's a 5'10". He's not a petite male like, you know, some people.
He's stocky.
He's kind of stocky. But that 5'10", I believe, is the average height for the American male.
Yeah, but the whole point
is not like a midget.
But that's the headline news. That's he's got lifts.
He's wearing
boots.
Lifts.
Politico, the bastion of political reporting in the United States. He's lying about his height. Dude, we're so lost.
That is pathetic. Well, I have another pathetic thing because this got played. This is a talk video.
Oh, TikTok.
And this thing got played all over the place. And I'll just, instead of doing the punchline, I'll do it at the beginning. I believe that people have been suckered by this is bull crap. Some guy.
Yep.
It's like a two-camera, well, it's not a two-camera shoot, but there's this character that's going around bitching about being called Sir.
Oh yes.
And I've seen people play it, and one of the people that played it on their podcast, you and I both know, she goes on and plays it straight as, oh my God, it's gone too far. This guy's full of crap. This is set up. Yeah. Who's taking the movie, A? And then it gets weirder and weirder as if no one notices. The guy's eating like 3 dozen oysters. He's at the fanciest restaurants in town. Then he's at he's in a French bistro dressed up as some sort of a French looking guy with a dog. He's got a dog and he pushes around in a thing. The dog is dressed with a beret and a. It's stupid.
What podcast? Who played it? I don't know who played it on their podcast.
There's somebody named Natalie that we both know.
Oh, goodness. On that podcast? That's not a podcast. It's a YouTube show.
Yeah, okay, with a YouTube show. Yeah. But people everywhere have been playing this thing as an example of, the pronoun thing's gotten too far. But it's really not anything to do with pronouns. It's about this guy being called Sir. And now we can play it and assume that this is bull crap.
Talk. TikTok.
Looks like he's having a nice feast.
She here. Yeah, it's okay. It's all good.
But it was not all good.
Hi. I use she, her pronouns. I'm not sir.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, like it's like a knife in the heart. I did specifically ask ahead of time not to be called sir. Yeah, I'm just going to go.
Okay.
Yeah, the sweet water starts at, okay.
I'm so sorry. I apologize.
It's just always like a knife. It always hurts every single time. I was wondering if there's a manager I could talk to about something that happened. Yeah, I was called sir.
Oh, okay.
It just really sucks every time it happens. I don't need to be called ma'am. I just need to not be called sir, you know?
Thank you.
Did you call me sir? I just want to tell you that
The person who gave me this called me sir.
What?
Called me sir.
Oh, yeah.
It's just like, it kind of just hurts a lot to get called sir.
Oh, sorry about that.
Very good. Right, thank you so much. No. Oh, I'm, yeah. Thank you. I'm not a sir. Nothing like a good misgendering. It does. It is a knife in the gut when I get called sir. I feel like I need to tell him. I need to tell him that that hurt. It hurts more though, and it's not intentional, because it means like this. This is sir to him. I know you didn't mean it, but I'm not a sir.
I'm so sorry.
It's okay. I know you didn't mean it. It's just, you know, it hurts. I know when people clock me, it's fine, but like it does kind of hurt. Thank you. I'm not sir. Not sir. Not sir. But the guy who dropped the food off, he called me sir twice in a row. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Right. So there's only two possible reasons for this. The most likely, how do I become a TikTok star? The second most likely, how do I get out of paying my bill? He's eating all kinds of dynamite oysters, French stuff, nice, beautiful food. And you call the man every single day. I need to talk to the manager. You talk to the manager and you get it for free.
Well, that's probably it. That's a good bit. But this whole thing seems staged to an extreme. Nobody cares about it. I've heard about the pronouns, but this sir thing is new and it's bull crap. And this guy, if you saw him, you know, he's got lipstick on and he's got a bouffant hairdo and he's got, you know, he's prissy.
Yeah, but restaurants are afraid.
You're not going to call him sir anyway.
Restaurants are afraid of getting called out, going viral on TikTok, and then being protested.
Getting the free food may be the gimmick. It's like a knife in the gut.
I'm going to try it myself here in Fredericksburg. Did you just call me sir? It's like a knife to my heart. Yes, it is.
Like a knife every time.
May I talk to the manager? I mean, I'm really insulted. Oh, you'll give it free? Okay, thank you.
They left that out of the video.
With that, I'd like to thank you for your courage. Say in the morning to you, the man who put the C in the ARC. Yes, welcome to the ARC. Ladies and gentlemen, say hello to my friend on the other end, the one and only Mr. John C. DeBoer.
Well, in the morning to you, Mr. Adam Green. In the morning, ships, sea boots on the ground, feet in the air, subs in the water, and all the dames and knights out there.
In the morning to the trolls in the troll room who have been hanging around for quite a while. Let me count. 18:37 today. I know you're going to say it's low, but you know we are 2 hours and 15 minutes into the show. A normal drop off is to be expected. These will be the new numbers as long as we have
it's
our. It's not low.
1800 on a Thursday is average.
Well, then we're above average because we're 2 hours and 15 minutes into the show. This is good news. Well, it's good. This is good. Good on you, trolls. And they've been pretty helpful today, the trolls. They've been nice. Good to see him. I love it. Almost 2,000 trolls in the troll room. Become a troll. Go to trollroom.io. You know you want to. You know it's where your home is. Go join us there, and you can troll along with everybody else while you listen to the live stream, noagendastream.com, or try a modern podcast app at podcastapps.com. Actually, I've been using the upgraded version of Podcast Guru lately, I'm on Android. I'm still using Graphene OS, but that's basically Android. It's good. It is snappy. It's snappy, and it does all the live stream stuff and everything you want it to do. So try that one out, Podcast Guru at podcastapps.com. It's a value for value proposition here on the show. We've been doing it for over 16 years. People are still amazed. How does that work? Well, you got to ask people. First of all, you got to treat people with respect. Don't call them your fans or your audience. Fans.
We get a lot of fans helping us out.
No, we don't actually have fans. We have the opposite. Go look at No Agenda Social. We got no fans. No, we have producers who take this job very seriously. And critics, yes. And they take it very seriously. And we appreciate that. And they do all kinds of groovy stuff that we could otherwise never afford to do. Just like noagendaartgenerator.com. Sir Paul Couture wasn't doing that. We never have that. We don't have the budget to have someone make that, maintain that, monitor it from nut jobs. That's a beautiful example of some time and talent in the trifecta of time, talent, and treasure. And we really love our producers who update art there and give us art to work with. And just as we love our producers on noagendasocial.com, of course. And, you know, they're free to criticize us, which happens a lot.
Which they seem to be very happy to do.
Yes, a lot. Adam shitting on the people that pay his rent. Really? Really? We're giving you a free product here. You only have to give us value back if it's worth anything to you. That's
and
how
most of the people who make that complaint don't contribute.
No, probably not.
They never contribute. We had one guy quit the show recently. I don't have his note. I should read it. You two Jew lovers, I've had it with you.
Hey, there's the opening of the show right there. That's the opening of the show.
I've had it with you.
No, I think we're pretty much in the middle on that and try to just show all sides of what you're not hearing because you're being mind controlled. No matter where you are, your media is trying to control your thoughts, your actions, and with that comes social media. Anyway, back to the value for value. I want to thank the artist who brought us the artwork for episode 1603. We titled that one Rolling Start. And it was the second time in a row, which means she's on deck for a hat trick. Dame Kenny Ben. This was such a nice piece that even the artists were posting like, that's it. Well, after Dame Kenny Ben, we shouldn't even try to compete. It's not worth it anymore. This was the very evil-looking pumpkin with the hearing aids and nice little sound waves going into I got a note about that, actually, about the high-powered hearing aids.
Yes, I got that note, too. Read it.
I'm glad you grabbed onto the high-powered hearing aids. It caught my attention as well. And this person works for... I'd not say where, but in the Starkey company, who are a hearing aid manufacturer. I just want to provide a few points of clarification. How high-powered aids are, in fact, a category. They output greater than 120 dB in gain. Over-the-counter can only output to a max of 104 dB in gain. I've dug through the M5M, can't find more info on what they are, but it is, in fact, the Starkey, I think they call it the power version of the power BTE behind the ear hearing aids. Ab Starkey.
Well, I thought you were going to read the note about it. There's also a guy who had this phenomenon of hearing voices. Did you get that note?
I think we talked about that on the last show.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't remember.
This company does does provide the veterans assistance. Regardless, I'd like to know who the audiologist is because this should not be happening to anybody. Tinnitus, also mispronounces tinnitus. There can be all kinds of extra frequencies that come along with that. It can drive you crazy. There was someone on X who was like, Curry, you don't know what you're talking about with hearing aids. Okay. All right. I think I'm an expert at hearing.
Why would anyone say that? Do they hate you?
Yeah, just basic hate. You know, not a donor, not a producer. Trust me on that.
No, just some guy hates you.
Yeah, it happens. I'm very hateable. Dame Kenny Ben, thank you very much, Dame Kenny Ben. We really appreciate what you've done. Once again, let's take a look at some of the art that was submitted as well. A lot of pumpkins, of course.
A lot of pumpkins.
And I really like Nico Symes' pumpkin. I like the all-seeing eye pumpkin. I thought it was a great piece. And
yeah, I didn't like it at all, actually, because I thought it was... I didn't like the drawing that was... And I didn't like the all-seeing eye is...
No, you didn't like it.
A cliche.
You hated it. Yeah, you hated it.
I hated it. I did.
Was hate dripping from you. I think we both thought the pearl clutch was cute from Dame of the Absurd.
Yeah, but it wasn't.
Wasn't clear enough. We were clearly looking for.
I did like the Amaryllis Fox videotape or Gentleman's Club, a little thing, but it was too small.
Yeah, it was a little.
Couldn't
too
even
small.
Read Amaryllis Fox on it. There's a couple other ones. There's another one. The high powered Tante Neal's high powered hearing aid thing has all the text is unreadable.
Yeah, I know.
I don't know what she's thinking.
Yeah, that's too bad.
We're not going to use what's his name, the Matthew Perry thing.
Did you have some bonus content for the donation segment about Matthew Perry? You sent me.
No, I mean, I sent you the thing to put into the show notes, which people can go reference. It's a Rumble show where they go on and on about Matthew Perry's going to blow the lid off pedophilia.
That's why they killed him.
And that's why they killed him. And I'm thinking, well, okay, sure. And my comment in the thread that was floating around was, where was the, if you have that kind of information, you keep threatening it for years, you better have a dead man switch someplace.
Exactly.
In other words, something that gets mailed out the minute you're dead.
Do you have a dead man switch for your deepest, darkest secrets?
I have a bunch. Yeah. A bunch of stuff goes in the mail and all hell is going to break loose.
I believe you.
All hell is going to break loose.
I believe you. Oh, ladies and gentlemen, John C. Dvorak has a dead man switch. Nice. Do I get anything, or is it just going to like the New York
you're
time?
A part of it. You're going to be doomed. It's over for you.
Thank you very much, Dave Kenny Ben, for your artwork. I see a lot of art has already been submitted for this episode. Thank you, artists. You're all highly appreciated, all the work that you do. Of course, we want to thank our financial donors, part of the treasure of the trifecta, and we always go for our executive and associate executive producers first, along with today, more PhD candidates who will be awarded the coveted No Agenda PhD in Media Deconstruction. And we kick it off with Anthony Sakovsky from Highland, New York, who comes in with 1333.33. In the morning, no jingles, no karma. This donation is for two people. Okay. 1,000 is for my knighthood and PhD. The 333.33 is for my brother Mike. If you could please deduce us both.
You've been deduced.
My brother hit me in the mouth over 10 years ago now. I haven't missed an episode since 2017. Please knight me Sir Anthony, protector of Installation 07. And thank you for your courage, whatever that means. We're happy to do that. Happy to do that. Thank you.
Kyle Selig in Kakona, Wisconsin, came in with $1,002. And he wrote a handwritten two notes. He wrote one in with the check, and then another envelope came in shortly thereafter. And the notes are very hard to read. Just my two cents, he writes. I would be honored to call you my friend, both friends.
We're your friends. Kyle. We're your friends, Kyle.
Both friends. I did it for the education you both provided. And then another note comes in on a different piece of paper with a three-hole punch. She says, if it bounces, I lived right. Nice. I'll get right with you.
John, you better submit that check right away. It bounces.
Nice. Well, actually, when Jay was going through this and she looks at this note, she says, if it bounces, I lived right. And she says to me, is this a suicide note, you think? I said, no.
I hope not.
It's no.
No. Does he add any jingles or anything?
No, that was it. What you see in those two notes.
All right, Kyle. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Kyle.
Servant. Hamilton, Ohio, 1,000, working at the university as a dude named Ben for 37 years. Listening to so many boring conferences, lectures, and meetings, but never got a PhD. Now, after 1,000 episodes of No Agenda and $1 an episode, I have a PhD in media deconstruction. Yes, you do, Servant. I'm getting one as well. Jay has put mine in the mail. I'm very excited. I will have it framed and put it on my wall. And
your wall of shame.
No, I'm going to put it in the studio. Display it proudly. You bet.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
Jeffrey Corbett's up and from Hamilton, Ohio, $1,000. Love the show. Please knight me, Sir Corby. Thanks.
And thank
nice
you.
Nice note.
Sir Cox nice in Austin, Texas. Maybe we'll see you, Sir Cox, on the 18th at the meetup. 1,000. This is my birthday, Friday the 3rd, and this should make me Baron Dr. Cox. I'd also like to announce my mother's dame name of Dame Rosie Villa, protector of wall pockets, as she was damed on her birthday last June 7th and now has chosen her name. And you've made it official, Sir Cox. Baron, soon to be. Thank you.
Lee C. Noir, $1,000, and he sent a note in, which I have right here. I just have the I just have the PDF. Hello, John. What? Not Adam.
I'm not Adam. Adam's not included?
I can't imagine how well, yeah, maybe I can, how tough it can be to live, to do live content. That's what he says. So he's happy with our work ethic.
Yes.
I don't want to be that guy who tells you how you screwed up. That's why you're not listed. It's directed at me. Okay. How you screwed up, and here's where I want to avoid the word but.
Adam's great.
In the last couple of shows, you commented that the dead attackers in Israel did not have a reason to wear body cams unless, as you suggest, they were going to cover themselves legally in case they got sued.
Which makes so much sense.
When this happened, I was disappointed. But all politics is local, and that attack was at least as much political as anything. People that, in that circumstance, that choose to wear body cams, I don't even know where you get a body cam, to be honest about it.
It's a GoPro.
Who were told to wear body cams for local celebrations of their success, or at least of their activities, probably never thought about lawyers. Lawyers were the first thing you thought of. You can speculate on somebody's motivation if you're that far from what they think. For instance, quote, a good way to spend my day is going into another country and killing families in their beds.
Oh, man. Unquote. This is ghoulish.
Your instinct seems to be to dig around for other perspectives, and you're good at it, like any other human being. You have your bias, we all do. Yours is probably more like mine, which makes you interesting to listen to. Thanks. No jingles, no karma.
All right. Thanks for the note.
Okay, and then mentions a couple of other things. Also, I've listened to a recent podcast, and it sounds like I can get a knighthood and a degree on the cheap, so here I am. And then he wants to use his name and two different names. He's got a knighthood coming up, and he'll be on his diploma. He has to send the details into
NoGenderRings.com.
Yes. Soon to be Sir Lee C. Noir.
Yes, indeed. And Sir David of Ross from Colorado Springs comes in with 50604. Dear John and Adam, here's a number station for you. Pay attention, comrades. I hope your day is filled with warmth and sunshine and victory parades for the Texas Rangers and next year the Dallas Cowboys. I love you both. 73s, David, Kilo 5, Delta, Papa Yankee, Sir David of Ross. Well, 73s, Kilo 5, Alpha, Charlie, Charlie. I'll give you a gratuitous rubblizer.
India, Tango, Mike, stand by. 33, 33, 33, rubblizer out.
There you go. Gratuitous number station for you.
Nisha Pet in Beauceville, Beauceville is something. It's some French. It's in Quebec, so it's pronounced in the Quebecois. I am Nisha Pet, a French Scandinavian. Thanks for all you do. My life would not be the same without you. I donated with PayPal $369, which is $533.55 Canadian. Please play an order. Douchebag, me no like it. You've been de-douched and respect.
Douchebag.
No likey.
You've been de-douched.
R-E-S-P-I-C-T.
All righty then. Let's see. We have Anonymous from Orlando. Let me open up the note here. And hold on a second. Where is page
second
two?
One.
Yeah, page two. I got it. Is it one of those long ones? No, it's a short one. Here we go. In the morning, John and Adam, first time. What are you drinking?
Just polar.
First time plus birthday donation.
Man, you heard that. You heard that little.
I hear that. I can
recognize. This microphone is amazing.
What is your microphone? Is that the Heil? Heil!
Yeah, it's a Heil.
Wish I could send more to reflect the value I find listening each week. No, you know what? I'm going to disagree with you. If this is your max, you sent us a lot. You reach the top. This is highly appreciated. However, keeping my three human resources out of terrible public schools takes top priority these days. Love and light from the deep blue bleeding heart of Orange County, Florida, where critical thinking is prohibited. P.S. I haven't heard anyone tell you this in a while, so keep doing what you're doing. You bet. And and I'll give you a de-douching since it's first time.
You've been de-douched.
Brendan Takash or Takash or Takash in Western Springs, Illinois. 333. Switcheroo. Hi, Tam, John, and Adam. The raffle was held at Sir Spooky's Halloween Spooktacular this past Sunday. 17 people attended and contributed. Please credit Sir LQTM as the winner of this executive producer title.
Yes.
Full meetup report will be sent to Adam. Jingles, don't eat me, Joe Bojiden. JCD, donate. Regards, Brendan Takash, Sir Spooky of the Elm Streets.
Don't eat me, Bojiden. You're scary. So scary.
Donate. Donate. Donate.
That's the worst one.
I should mention that Sir LQTM said in a separate note, saying thank to all the attendees to Sir Spooky of the Elm Streets meetup for making this credit possible. Also, thanks to making me feel welcome at my first meetup. First time in, big winner. Please grant karma to all the attendees and kindly play JCD Spooky Donate, which is up there already. See y'all at the next one.
All right. Then we have another switcheroo, which is from Lady Vox. Dame of the Gateway. Switcheroo, please credit my donation to System Sam, Samuel Corp. I'm not interested in climbing the peerage ladder, but I love bringing others to the round table. Hello, Adam and John. Please do not misquote me to your million plus listeners. I don't hate you. I never said I did. Oh, I know what this is. On the last show, at the very end, we had Lady Vox with her show next on the stream, and this is Lady Vox who had said, I'm just not donating to them anymore. Then she writes, she did not say she hated us. In fact, she doesn't hate us. I know she doesn't.
No, she didn't say she hated us. She says she's not donating anymore. I know. She doesn't.
It was a faux pas. I'm wrong. I repent. I apologize. Forgive me. I just didn't appreciate your sometimes condescending or entitled tone towards people who give their time, talents, and treasure in so many ways to help sustain this amazing community you've inspired. Well, how come I'm not allowed to be condescending or entitled on No Agenda Social? Everybody does that. I'm not allowed to.
Everybody
troll.
Is condescending and entitled on No Agenda Social.
I'm not allowed to do it. I'm not allowed to do it. For some reason, I have
but
to be
you,
holy.
Yeah. You, no. The guy who set the whole thing up, has to shut up and sit down.
That's pretty much
what
it.
What is this?
I'm not allowed to troll. And actually, it was a mistake because if you go back and look at the thread, which I do not advise anybody to do, I was not even, and this is part of the problem with social media and Mastodon in particular. I made a comment to the other person on the thread and it was like, dude, you want a hug? That was my condescending tone. But I'm not allowed to do that because it's no good. I have to be a bootlicking lackey to all. This is why I just don't post much. bootlicking lackey. That's right. I need to just be a lackey. I love the V4V model. It's what drew me to the show in the first place and what keeps me here. But V4V is about more than just financial support. I never, for one moment, abandoned the model. Well, no, you did.
Yeah, you did.
You said it. You said, I'm just not
giving my money to other podcasts.
Yeah. She's going to get mad about this now, too. If you listen around the stream, you will understand that I participate, contribute, and collaborate with my mouth, my mind, and my money. Independent media has become my cause and my purpose since M5M literally scared my father to death during Schmovid. You have his WW2 ham radio bug. I do, and I really appreciate this. I treasure that, actually. That is in my studio, in my museum.
What'd you do?
She gave me her dad's World War II ham radio bug. Like it's a Morse code key, only it's a bug. So it goes, works a little differently.
Yeah, I know
what it is. Yeah, but she gave that to me.
Wow.
A long time ago. Yeah,
I remember that now because I think you took a picture of it and sent it around.
Yeah, I wouldn't have given something that special to someone I hate. Yes.
Huh?
I defend podcasting with a visceral.
She's not asking for it back. Is she asking for it back?
No. She's a good egg. No problem.
Good egg.
She's a good egg.
Okay.
I defend podcasting with a visceral intensity that nearly got me my smoking hot sir into a bar fight last night. You got into a fight
over
podcasting?
One of those women. I know the type.
So please don't.
Are you going to let him say that to you?
Hey, man, podcasting sucks. So please don't ever tell this audience I hate you. I apologize. You do not hate me. We're all just here to knock the sharp edges off each other, man. For a better community, I'd never withdraw my support from a noble cause. And then, all right, best regards, Lady Vox, Dame of the Gateway. P.S. Sir Spencer of Bowl After Bowl would really appreciate it if JCD would unblock him on No Agenda Social. I humbly request this on his behalf. He's a glorious asset to Gitmo Nation. Unblock him, John.
You know, I don't know how to unblock.
You go to your profile and right there it says...
I don't care. I don't want to know.
Lady Vox.
I'll take it. Okay. It's under advisement.
Okay. Lady Vox, but I misquoted you. I apologize. However, I get to troll too. I feel I should be... No Agenda Social is No Agenda Social. I want to be able to say, you just want a hug, man. Come on. That's not condescending or entitled. That's just trolling. But I, you know.
All right. We're onward.
Onward. Yes. Last one.
Linda Lupatkin, Lakewood, Colorado. Jobs karma. For a resume that gets results, go to imagemakersinc.com for all your executive resume and job search needs. That's imagemakersinc.com. Or just find Linda Lupatkin under the show's producer list.
There you go.
Jobs, 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 and jobs. Let's vote for jobs. Yeah. Karma.
And that wraps up our executive and associate executive producers and PhD awardees, our graduates of No Agenda. Thank you all very much. We highly appreciate what you do. The PhD, of course, is real. The titles are real. You are an executive or associate executive producer of episode 1604 of the No Agenda show. Put that anywhere where titles are recognized. It's recognized all over Hollywood while it still exists. Yeah, put it on imdb.com. You'll see Hollywood is there and you'll be recognized. It's totally valid. And John's going to take us through to the 50s and we'll get to our knightings, our PhD graduates, etc.
I would definitely put it on my LinkedIn profile too. Yep. Sir Tooth Fairy, Valparaiso, Indiana, $160.40. Sir Bates in Bloomington, Minnesota, $160.16. Lydia Terry Dominelli in Rochester, Minnesota, $160.04. These are the special 160 that basically the Kepler supernova donations. Be huge. Oh, yes. Promotion. We got three people. Like,
great idea. When I saw that, I'm like, this is going to go nowhere.
Of course, they went nowhere.
This is not a good promotion.
It wasn't even my idea.
Who do we blame? Jay?
No, it was one of our producers that sent a note in because he said, you know, there's nothing else going on. I want you to try this.
Yeah, thanks.
He got three. Sandra Edmonds Lydia Terry Dominelli in Rochester, New Hampshire?
You have 160.04. You have now.
Okay. Sandra Edmonds in Lakeside, California, 120. Baron Latikin, $100 from Houston, Texas. Kevin McLaughlin, here he is. This is a short list again. We'd be doing better. 8008, 1604 boob donation, and he's got the no pun. He's the Duke of Luna.
Oh, and punless. Punless, wow. Okay.
Punless. Shelby Diamond Star Photography in Des Plaines, Illinois, 80. He said, happy 16th. Okay. Dana Carroll in Laughlin, Nevada, 7227. And I got one I can't get even read because this is for some reason he wrote a long note.
Yeah, he wrote a note to me, Sir David Jarman from North Turramurra, New South Wales, and came in with 72. And very nice note. I appreciate what you wrote there. And he came in with a second donation of 63.85. Not sure why, but he does ask, why do I have to pay 100? He says 1,640 and 55 cents in dollary dues to get $1,000 USD. Back in not 2009, it was parody. Yeah, you got a question. What happened there? What happened?
It happens. We had parody with Canada for a while, too, during the Iraqi War.
Yeah.
Back to Kevin McLaughlin in Concord, North Carolina, 6006. Small boobs. Bernie Adama.
Oh, Bernie.
Adama in Hinton, Iowa.
Yeah, Bernie.
5110. We haven't heard from Sir Bernie for a while.
He's in the meetup report.
Sir Luke Rayner in London, UK, 55. And now we have $50 donors. And again, we have a short list again today. Jill Woods in Ocean Grove, New Jersey. Kyle Mann in Cincinnati, Ohio. Julie Minadio in Costa Mesa, California. Ryan Sharp in Huntsville, Alabama. Brandon Locklear in Sugar Hill, Georgia. Justin Hellner in Vine Grove, Kentucky. Shauna Norberg in Seattle, Washington. Tony Lang in Castle Pines, Colorado. Dotted Mind in Lincolnshire, UK. And Jordan, on the last but not least, in a very short list of 36 total, Jordan Poino in Salem, Don't Inhale Him, Oregon. I want to thank these folks for making the show 1604 happen.
And as thanks always, we thank everyone who came in under $50. That is usually for reasons of anonymity. We'll do $49.99. Happens all the time. We will not read those. And, of course, everybody who has a sustaining donation. If you don't have one, please consider getting one of those. It can just be whatever small amount you want per month. But we get enough of those, and it does keep us through the rougher patches. If you'd like to learn more, go here.
Dvorak.org/NA
or noagendadonations.com. And thank you again to our executive and associate executive producers of 1604.
Our formula is this: we go out, we hit people in the mouth.
Order.
And it's kind of short list today, but we start off with Sir By His Grace, who wishes Greta a happy third birthday. She celebrated on the 30th. Greta is, of course, the three-legged wonder dog. Sir Cox celebrates on the 3rd of November tomorrow. And happy birthday to Anonymous from Orlando. Happy birthday from everybody here at the best podcast in the universe.
It's your birthday. Title changes.
Title changes. Don't want to be a douchebag. Nah, no douchebaggery here. We heard him earlier with his donation. Sir Cox, who also will be a graduate of the PhD in media deconstruction. He has donated an additional $1,000. It can be all in one go or in aggregate, but you now are officially Baron Dr. Cox. Actually, you'll be official once I give you that PhD, but we'll just call it that for now. Thank you very much for supporting the best podcast in the universe. Now I'd like to hand out our PhDs up on the podium here. Anthony Sarkovsky, Kyle Selig, Servant, Jeffrey Corbett, Sir Cox, and Sir Lee Noir, who will be a sir in just a moment. All of you are now official graduates of No Agenda. Graduates, you have a PhD in media deconstruction. Thank you for supporting us, and thank you for graduating.
God.
I say thank you for graduating. I'm getting better at it.
Yeah, your script needs work.
Well, it's not like anyone is writing me a script. You know, I could use some help. Just saying.
Get a hold of Jen Psaki's producer.
Oh, please. Oh, now you just insulted me. Now you're just insulting me. We have one dame and we have three knights. So if you can grab your... There. Oh, I'll take that. Come on up here. Anthony Sarkovsky, Jeffrey Corbett, and there he is, Lee C. Noir. All of you have supported the No Agenda Show in the amount of $1,000 or more. Some of you instantaneously today. I'm therefore very proud to pronounce the S, Dame Rosie Villa, protector of wall pockets. Sir Anthony, Protector of Installation 07, Sir Corby, and Sir Lee Noir. For you, we've got Hookers and Blow, Rent Boys and Chardonnay. Along with that, we've got Warm Beer and Cold Women, Fish Pie and Fellatio. We got Harlots and Haldol, Redheads and Rye, Organic Macaroni and Plasticizers, Beer and Blunts, Ruben S. Ruben and Rosé, Sparkling Cider and Escorts, Ginger Ale and Gerbils. And of course, Mutton and Mead. Yes, head over there to noagendarings.com. Also, if you got a PhD today, the same website will help you enter your address so we know where to send it, exactly what name you want on it for our knights and our dame.
Yes, and we recommend you put your name on it, not your knight.
Yeah, it'll look a lot more official.
Yeah, well, so what people won't go up to, because you're going to put it on the wall maybe,
yeah,
and go, what is this?
Yeah, you don't want that, because you go up to it and be like, oh, this is real, which it is. It's a real PhD in media deconstruction. Noagendarings.com. And for those of you who are a dame or knights today, you will also get your wax to seal your important correspondence with. Along with that comes a certificate of authenticity. And thank you all from the bottom of our hearts. Thank you so much for supporting the show. We love what we do, and we couldn't do it without you.
No Agenda Meetup.
Yes, it's No Agenda, the home game. You get to do it all together in a location of your choice. NoAgendaMeetups.com is where you can find out where in the world a meetup will take place near you. It is an incredible list. It is an incredible collection of producers who are out there organizing these. It is more necessary now than ever in today's crazy world. You just get out, you just put your phone in your back pocket, turn it off, hang out with some people, have a brewski or whatever you want to do, and just chat and have a good time. Meet children from other lands. And this is what they did in Fort Wayne in October. Here's their meetup report.
Hello, Adam and John. This is Shannon from Fort Wayne. Many believe, and it's likely true, that everybody in attendance had a great time. Look at that juice.
PBR Street Gang in the morning. Thank you for your courage.
Dame Trinity from Fort Wayne. Thank you for your courage.
Hi, it's Shelly from Fort Wayne. Thank you for your courage.
This is Jared from Fort Wayne, not the subway guy.
Yeah, thank you. The Webster County Wet Your Whistle Meetup sent in a report.
Hello, hello, hello. This is Charles Shelton at the Webster County Wet Your Whistle Wednesday Meetup, third monthly. And we have a nice, fine crowd of fine folks here. I'm just going to pass the phone around.
Sir Matt Decker in the morning. Shout out to Dangerous Dan. Couldn't make it, but shout out to him.
This is Baronet Benjamin. We had pizza. Beautiful. Yeah.
In the morning.
In the morning, this is Sir Bernie Adamo from Hinton, Iowa, attending this, my first meeting out here. So I hope you and John and Adam are doing well. Good morning and in the morning to Gitmo Nation.
Thank you for your courage for everybody coming out here today. And connection is protection. Respect we much, we must, we mitch much, which that's much, bitch, be committed.
Nailed it. Fantastic. Great report. We got a written report from Sir Spooky of the Elm Streets, the Halloween Spooktacular meetup. Was one of the friendliest good time. Was a friend fiendishly good time. I'm sorry. It was one of the highest attended suburban Chicago meetups. Happy to report that a few people wore costumes. Curiously, the first couple to attend came dressed as federal agents. Was it a costume or their uniform? Can't be too sure. We raffled off some horror movies, a cozy blanket from the No Agenda shop, and credit for the donation. We got that earlier. A generous group of producers managed to raise the pot to the executive level. Ultimately, Sir LQTM was the lucky winner of the credit. It was his first meetup. Donation of 333 is coming via PayPal. The final highlight of the night was watching a very special episode of Swamp Thing. Yes, your performance as rock star Nathan Stone elevated and otherwise goofy and baffling plot. You had more screen time than the titular Swamp Thing himself, and for that, we're grateful. I look forward to screening it again next year. And thank you very much for that report, Brandon. Sounds like it was a very fine meetup indeed. Here's what's on the calendar for today. New Hampshire's meetup at the Community Oven should kick off in just a bit at Epping, and that's in Epping, New Hampshire. The Five Forks First Thursday inaugural meetup at Bullwinkle's Tavern in Simpsonville, South Carolina, 6 o'clock today. The November Northern Wake No Agenda Meetup, 6 o'clock at Compass Rose Brewing in Raleigh, North Carolina, underway in just about an hour from now. Tomorrow, the second official Vancouver Canada Meetup for 2023. Let me reserve a place for you at Ludisha Pizza, 7 o'clock, Vancouver, British Columbia, Scandinavia. On Saturday, fun in Frisco, 2 o'clock at Sky House Frisco Station, Frisco, Texas. And finally, on Sunday, our next show day, Central Florida Meetup, 2 o'clock at Hourglass Brewing in Longwood, Florida. Reminder, the Keeper and I will be at the Austin Sunset Valley, I think that's Doc's backyard, meetup on November 18th, and at the Indianapolis, Indiana meetup on December 4th. There's going to be people from neighboring states coming to that meetup. It's going to be quite the scene, I believe. And we're very excited to be there. No Agenda Meetups, it's a great place to get together with people who think the same, who don't get triggered by stuff, who aren't mind-controlled by the media, and who know the connection is protection. Noagendameetups.com. If you can't find one near you, start one yourself. It's easy and always a party.
Sometimes you want to go hang out with all the nights and days. You want to be where you want me, triggered or held to blame. You want to be where everybody feels the same.
It's like a party. Well, I only have one ISO. It's just, it is what it is, so I'll play it.
Wow. I have one ISO, too.
Well, let me play mine.
Wow.
That's my ISO.
Wow.
Can you beat that?
I think I do beat it.
Fascinating.
We could do them both. They're so short.
Fascinating.
Wow.
How about the other way?
Okay. Hold on. Let me try it the other way around.
Wow.
Fascinating.
Okay. Sold. We'll do it live. We'll do it on the fly.
Do it live. So I have one goofy clip I want to play. Although it could be the end of the show.
Hold on. Let me, if you're going to do something goofy, let me make sure we don't do anything important. It's all bump. It's all down.
I have long COVID explained.
Yeah.
New Lake and Death Valley.
I want to do COVID on... There's some great stuff for Sunday. The WhatsApp gate with Boris Johnson's... the WhatsApps about, you know, this big inquiry about.
Oh, okay, we'll do that on Sunday.
We'll do that.
I do have one more serious one I want to get out of the way from New Tank.
Don't do anything serious. Do something funny.
Okay, well, I got the one funny. This has been going around. This is the a clip that's been floating around because it's so funny. It's from an Australian news channel about. It's the Oz TV biotech story.
An Australian biotech company has developed a new treatment it hopes will prevent people dying from COVID vaccine.
That is, wow. Who needs that? We can predict it for you. That's crazy. All right. I'll do a crazy one. This is just a couple of new terms. It's only 58 seconds. They had the United Nations World Cities Day held in Turkey. And Her Excellency Emin Erdogan, I guess President Erdogan's wife is an excellency. She gave a speech, as did Guterres. But there was a new term in here that I really liked.
Bir anlamda şehirleşmede gizli.
The key to every global change is hidden in urbanization. However, the importance of cities has gained a different dimension in the modern world, where urbanization is growing at an unstoppable pace. Research shows that by 2050, 7 out of 10 people will live in cities. Rapid urbanization brings with it many crises and tests for us. One of the most important problems it has raised is undoubtedly climate change, which has turned our Earth into a bleeding globe.
Come on.
What?
The bleeding globe.
A bleeding globe?
that's the new term. Our Earth, thanks to climate change, our Earth is now a bleeding globe.
Wow.
That was my thinking exactly. Wow. All right, everybody. So we do have some good stuff for Sunday. I have a ton of big pharma related things, along with COVID and more climate change. We just had to give you the important stuff today. So aren't you glad you made it? Aren't you glad you're here? Aren't you glad you downloaded? Aren't you glad you subscribed to our podcast? Hit the subscribe button and that alarm bell.
Pound it.
Pound it. Coming up next on No Agenda Stream, we have, Podcasting 2.0. And hear the latest about what's going on in Podcasting 2.0. We've got a Bomb-A-Ran end of show mix with, some old ones there. Donald is in there. I'll put it all in the credits. Coming to you from the heart of the Texas Hill Country, it's here in FEMA Region number 6. In the morning, everybody, I'm Adam Curry.
And from Northern Silicon Valley, where I remain, we have our summer. It's continuing. I'm John C. Dvorak.
Oh, well, winter has kicked in here. It's 37 degrees outside. Remember
75.
Remember us at Dvorak.org/NA. Until Sunday, adios, mofos, a hooey, hooey. And such.
Bomb, 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 I ran. Bomb, 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 I ran.
In fact, I would say bomb them, and then bomb them again. Bomb them. We need to kill and bomb them. Bomb them. We need to kill and bomb them. Bomb them. We need to bomb them. We need to kill them and bomb them again.
Bomb, 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 bomb,
somebody's going to drop a nuke here. I don't know who it is, but I don't want to watch it. We need to kill them. We need to kill them. Bomb them. Bomb them. Bomb them and bomb them again. We need to kill them. We need to kill them. Bomb them. Bomb them and bomb them again, eh? And bomb them again, eh? Bomb them, bomb them, and bomb them again, eh? And bomb them again, eh? Bomb them, bomb them, bomb them, and kill them. Bomb them, bomb them, bomb them, and kill them. Bomb them again. Bomb, bomb, bomb them again. We need to kill them. Bomb, bomb, bomb them again. Bomb, bomb, bomb them again. We need to kill them. And bomb them again.
Bomb, 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 I ran.
Bomb, 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 I ran.
Dvorak.org/NA.
Wow.
Fascinating.